We're live, Mayor Wallen.
Thank you. Good evening and welcome, everyone. I'd like to call to order the study session of February 21st, 2017. If we could go around the table and identify ourselves for the record, please.
Jay Arnold.
John Pascal.
Kurt Triplett.
Kathy Brown.
Joel Funt.
Jean Antikenza.
Eric Shields.
Angela Ruggieri.
Toby Nixon.
Penny Sweet.
Dave Asher.
Doreen Marshoni.
And Amy Wallen. Thank you very much. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the council. So when we last had our study session on this, we covered a lot of territory and did not get to go in depth into the transportation elements as we wanted. So you asked that we come back and provide a more focused session on the transportation-related analysis that has gone on. So that's what we're going to do tonight. There's no decision tonight, but we welcome thoughts and feedback. And this still has to go through the Planning Commission and the Houghton Community Council, but we're looking for additional questions or input for the staff. So with that as an overview, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Angela Ruggieri to give you an overview.
Good evening. Jeannie Akitanz is here from Transpo, and she's actually going to give the presentation tonight. I just wanted to give you a little background. Since we met with you, we've met with Houghton Community Council and Planning Commission again. They directed us to look at the three-story option with the ability to go to five stories if certain benefits are provided. And so that's what Jeannie is incorporated into the study and the information she's going to give you tonight. We'll go back to to a joint session of Houghton Community Council and Planning Commission on Thursday night, report to them, get more direction, and then on March 23rd, we'll have the public hearing. And after that, they will prepare their recommendation, and we'll be back to see you with that.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, Jay?
Is it working?
Are you pressing the left button or the right button?
I'm pushing the right button. Thank you, Council. I'm going to talk a little bit about the background growth and traffic forecast. So that was of importance to the Planning Commission, and those are mostly focusing on auto traffic. And then we're going to talk about the Houghton Everest neighborhood, the plan, the outline of what we have today as far as land use and how that results in in traffic, trip generation for each of those development scenarios, as well as some background growth. And then we're going to talk about some of the corridor, tie this back with the corridor study and the corridor investments that we've been talking about and transit performance results. So different background investments that we've talked about along with the corridor. And then we will take a look at how that results in operations right at as a result of the center, right at the some of the intersections. So a little bit about background growth. Thank you. So a little bit about background growth. Just to confirm with everyone, there's tremendous growth happening in the region, and I think we see a little bit of an acceleration of it near term. We've been seeing that with some dramatic increases in not only jobs, but also population. So in the region, we expect these big numbers, big growth in the region and population. And that's true in Kirkland as well, like with almost a doubling of jobs as well as pretty substantial increase in population. So growth is happening and Kirkland is growing. Just want to make sure everybody's clear on that. And then a little bit about the Houghton Everest neighborhood background growth and traffic generation. So this, I think you've seen this. This is sort of an outline of what the plan is now in kind of aggregate terms. So the blue in this map is or first of all, just say 100. This is 108th. This is Northeast 68th. So the different parcels. Here's where Met Market is today, and here's where PCC is today. The development land use that's been defined for that we studied the greater. Alternative that we're setting is five stories approximately here in the back and then buffered by three-story heights and over here three-story. Some of the transportation improvements, they are to be determined. This shows some kind of a spine going through or some kind of feature. We're thinking maybe more likely if both parcels developed and we had a lot more consideration of it, we would put in a traffic signal, new traffic signal here, and close off all those driveways and access. We'll talk more about that. And then the other option is, in the future, there's potential for backage access. That way, that cleans up all the access in here, closes a lot of the driveways, reduces a lot of those potential conflicts, especially with pedestrians and bikes and all the car movements that occur today. So that's the land use. You should have seen this in the past. What does that result in? From the land use plan today, there are about 39 residential dwelling units. The retail square feet out there today is 105,000 square feet, and that's broken down into supermarket, convenience, coffee shop, and just general retail. And we use these categories because they generate trips a little bit differently, generate auto trips differently. As you can imagine, a grocery store generates differently than, say, a coffee shop, and we want to keep that that distinction. And then office, 38,000 square feet today of office. Those are those buildings in the northwest area. That's where some of the office is today. In the 2035 comprehensive plan, so this is the growth that we anticipate. This is what the comp plan was based on. We would assume that there were 360 residential dwelling units, because that there is some allowance for height there today. Retail would grow by 113,000 square feet. A lot of that would be taken up by the supermarkets, because there's a pressure for those to grow.
Jeannie, is that growth to 113?
213. Okay. So yes, 105 to 113, and 39 to 360 total. So supermarket would grow. These convenience and coffee shops would probably stay the same, with some general retail. But the big difference really is this: is the residential and some growth in office. So those would be either ground level or second story office potential. And then, so that's what's in the comprehensive plan. Not knowing, without our crystal ball, knowing precisely how it would be allocated to the site, this is what we assumed could happen. Yes.
So just a note as to how this works. When we did the comp plan, we made certain assumptions about what magnitude of development might happen under different zoning classifications. And so what you see in that 2035 column is really a representation of what we assumed for the BC zones, which are the zones we're talking about. And I would say, in retrospect, I think those are somewhat aggressive, or I don't know what the term, but maybe higher than what the economic actual development would be. It's allowable under the zoning, but would that actually happen? I'm a little skeptical as to whether that would happen.
On that, the 2035 comp plan in the Houghton side of the street allows for 5-story currently.
It does, but I did not assume
modified
that
dramatically. There's a lot of caveats to that, but it allows for that. So the 2035 comp plan column here assumes five stories.
No, it does not. It really assumed more of a 3-story model for this area. So in that regard, because the zoning hadn't changed, and we knew that we were going to be dealing with this kind of a study. So in that sense, this is more of a conservative estimate. Otherwise, I think it's more of a liberal estimate, if you will. So
market-wise,
that's right, right. If I had plugged in 5 stories in Houghton, these numbers would have been bigger.
Thank you. That muddies the water. Sorry.
Yeah, we were trying to make a fair comparison, and this is what we decided on.
Well, and the 2035 was what was decided on a couple of years ago when we did the comp plan, so that was not really a choice at this point in time.
So the 2035 mirrors the modest level.
Yeah. It kind of does, except for the
residential. Yeah. So that's what you see. That's the big change. of growth from now until 2035. Good chunk of change in growth. And then what happens after that is really this residential dwelling. So the modest change is the increase in residential units up in height, and that's the modest change to 574 units. And the greater change is 800 up to 862. So that's the big difference. We would assume that height, that extra height, is residential.
Question then.
Mr. Asher.
Can you show in some time, I don't know if you're prepared to do it tonight, where the height differences are? If 2035 is in the Houghton neighborhood, 33 stories, what's the difference between what was assumed under the 2035 comp plan named column and modest change? And where was that? Where is that change? If you don't have it, you know, that's okay. We're going to see this again. So if you don't have it, I'd like to see it sometime.
Definitely can come back with that.
Yeah.
Good question. Okay. So as it says on the bottom, when we generated traffic from this, we looked at the ITE, Institute of Traffic Engineers, trip generation manual. That's for automobile trips. There can be other trips generated here, transit, bike, ped trips, but we focused on trip generation rates. We assume that the grocery expands as noted, and that retail roughly remains the same, and office increases for all future builds, and the convenience stores, coffee shops stay the same. It's just that increase in height. So a little bit, just an explanation of that. So in creating the trip generation or traffic auto trips generation today, with the uses that are out there today on a daily basis, there's about 10,994 trips. And I'll just say this about grocery store and convenience store, like gas stations and coffee shops. They have this level of bypass trips. So if you're if you're driving by and you're picking up gas, you're not generally generating a dune trip. It's a little bit of a nuance, but it's not a new trip that's generated, but it's that you were passing by the grocery store and you thought this is a convenient time to drop by and pick up something from the grocery store. So they're not generally considered new trips. There's a portion of them that are not considered new. And we took that into account. So we had 10,994 existing trips from existing land use. And in the PM peak hour, which we feel is the worst time of day, and I think everybody would agree, 713 trips. Based on the comp plan that we showed you, that level of growth that could come with the comprehensive plan, there's an increase of 4,000 trips, daily trips, which is an increase of 38%, and that gets us to 15,200 trips all day. And then on an hourly basis for that PM peak hour, that's 1,031, an increase of 45%, so 318 more peak hour trips. From here, just to compare to the other scenarios for 2035, we found that with this modest change, a little bit of height and residential, it's would increase trips by 1,400, approximately 9%, and up to 16,000 daily. And on the PM peak hour, it's roughly 8% with hourly volume of 1,114. So this just shows you there's a somewhat of an increase over what's in the 2035 comprehensive plan. And then the difference between that and the greater change, these numbers, 22% is over this 15,200. So when we talk about the greater change, total 18,538, an increase of 3,338 over the comp plan. So instead of 9%, it's more like it's double that, 22%. And on the hourly basis, it's 19%. Does that make sense? Is that clear? Okay.
I think so.
Good. I just want to make sure that's clear. And what this looks like, I just wanted to convey it again. So this is the greater change. This is what that land use looks like. And this is the difference in daily trips. So here we are today at existing This would be the increase from the comprehensive plan. This is the additional trips with that modest change, and this is the shift in trips, total trips with total daily trips with the greater change. Same thing down here. So you can kind of see what those proportions look like.
A couple questions for you, Ms. Marchione, then Ms. Drasher.
Yeah, I know you talk supermarket trips. What about Bartels? Are they asking for growth there?
I haven't heard anything from them, no. I don't know that they... I don't know what their plans are, but we have not heard anything. Have you?
No, I have not.
Okay.
I'm surprised.
Mr. Asher?
Thank you. The 11,000 approximate trips there are current verified trips. Is that correct?
11,000.
10,994, I'm sorry.
They are generated based on trip rates, so we didn't count the driveways and or the trips that people are making. We just use the same methodology to generate trips. We use the same methodology to generate trips from existing comp plan, modest change, and greater change. So instead of counting all the driveways and then using a different methodology, forecasting forward, we use the same methodology to estimate them.
Oh, okay, so what is the number of trips in sum on 108th Avenue, 6th Street South, in other words, going through the intersection there at the cross? Is that 10,994?
No.
Okay.
That's how much is generated by the site, and some go west.
Okay.
All right. As you can imagine.
So
they wouldn't all go through the intersection, but some of them might turn out of the other driveways and be dispersed other ways.
So if you were to look at all the colored areas under the greater trip scenario,
shown here, that represents the 18,538 and the 1,227.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It does not count the trips that exist today going to Google or going to the South Kirkland Park and Ride or going to other places unless they are related to the businesses in the study area. Is that
right.
correct?
So, there might be some Google trip that stops and goes grocery shopping there. And that's what I meant by this, bypass trip. But these would be new trips that are generated out of the driveways. They might be linked to other trips.
Okay.
And we'll get to the intersection stuff.
Well,
So when you're talking driveways, you're talking about the driveways into those two complexes.
Yeah. That's right.
So this is
touch points.
Not total traffic volumes. These are just trips from these parcels.
Yeah, and that's what I'm trying to understand how sterile these numbers are. Or how close they are to reality, and they seem pretty sterile.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. They're to give you a comparison. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we'll get to the intersection.
Okay.
So, and as you mentioned, they go in different directions. Now we've been at the same time we've been looking at the corridor and 6th and 108th and coming up with large. As broad a set of solutions as we can. We came and presented some of them to you, got some ideas and feedback from you and the Transportation Commission and from a variety of sources. So here are some of the investments that we thought would improve operations and conditions for transportation for moving people. So here's the pedestrian system today. There's the trail. The values that people have raised and that we've put out there are that they want people to connect. They want it connected communities. They want it to be walkable. They want it to be. They want it to work for that school peak. Some of the future, what's in the Transportation Master Plan, is some greenways and pedestrian connections for Kirkland Avenue, and then. These are 52nd, 53rd, and 60th are greenways these are in the Transportation Master Plan. And then what we've proposed is extending 60th Street, the greenway. It's in the plan as well, but what isn't really included is the how it links up with the trail and enhancing that trail connection so that it connects all the way across good, strong corridor. We have some other improvements, the Kirkland Avenue crossing. That's a as an extension, that makes a lot of sense. The CKC trail down here to the parking lot is a big investment, and then improving CKC access at Northeast 60th, I mentioned that. So those are the pedestrian trail type connections that we're considering in the corridor study. And then the bike system, very similar. In the background, you can't really see it real well, is where the bike lanes exist today. And these would be the future ones on Central Avenue, North 6th, Northup Way, and I believe behind Urban will be constructed Northup Way bike facilities. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then Northup Way is that connection that connects to the 520 trail. And then with the project, with our corridor study, we want to complete the bike network. So that's along 108th and 6th. Especially at the intersections, that's kind of where they die out. There are just these little missing pieces that we were suggesting. A nice connection, improving the connection on 70th for bicycles, and using that 60th Street Greenway, and then making sure we have things like bike racks and potentially bike share at the South Kirkland Park and Ride. So those are things that were raised in the corridor study.
Question for you, Jeannie, from mm-hmm. Mr. Arnold, or comment?
Can you talk a little bit about the difference between what you've proposed as a bicycle intersection versus green bike boxes?
Oh, okay. Green bike boxes just help the visibility of the bicyclists. There's a green box, and people are able to use those to be more visible and to get priority through the intersection. Bicycle intersection is continuous bike lanes that go through the intersection, and we have a picture of one a little later down the pike. But it is a more continuous all the way through the intersection, so not just the bike box.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay. And as far as transit, moving people was another value that people raised, and we felt there were some. Definitely some future transit in the bus rapid transit on 405. That's with a connection somewhere at 85th. And then light rail to the long future, light rail to the South Kirkland Park and Ride. That's that piece. And then what we've proposed is a transit signal priority at 6th and Kirkland Way. That's this piece up here. BRT on the CKC, keeping that. BRT or transit, should have had HCT on the CKC. Bus intersection at 6th and CKC. That's up here to enhance transit priority. And then the Houghton Park and Ride, potentially leasing that for private shuttle use is an idea that we came up with. Widening 108th to provide a Q jump and a new signal at 60th. That's a very long project, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. That's at the prompting of Transportation Commission and you and the council, thinking big, this is a pretty substantial idea. And then at South Kirkland Park and Ride, looking for different solutions with metro permitting for parking, improving access and egress with signals, real-time parking occupancy. These are things that Metro would partner with us on, education campaigns and performance monitoring. So those are all things that we've been thinking to move people and improve transit. Oops, previous. Didn't want to get in. And then for vehicular traffic, there's a range of things, but signal coordination along 6th behind Urban, Kirkland Way and Railroad Avenue intersection improvements were raised by the Everest community, just kind of improving sight distance and putting a left-turn pocket. Signal at 6th and 9th it's under design right now, and carrying that forward. Working with our regional partners to study improvements on expansion of 70th, that's this corridor. Maybe that could be done with the BRT project, but it's something we think ought to be done. And then don't block the box at the fire station. Driveway consolidation on 68th and 108th, we'll talk more about that. That's that access management as part of the Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center, or independently or with that project. And then reducing business access to signalize intersections and install new signal. That's kind of a bigger project. And then city, and we'll talk about that, citywide parking management strategies such as shared parking and joint parking use. So parking was raised by the community, and we're looking for parking solutions there. So those are the gamut of ideas that we came up with the corridor study. Here's a little bit more depth about some of those projects. The big one, in our thinking big about transit, we looked at extending, creating a new bat lane, widening by 12 business access and transit lane. It's the vernacular. It's generally a bus lane. It would be created through widening. We would create two sections that were about 1,000 feet long, and that gives the bus a nice jump around some of the queuing. And we would put signals in two sections. So the first section is at 68th going south. We would have a lane that's on the east side. Going north. Thank you. And it would be on the east side of 108th.
Can you point to it?
Mm-hmm. So here's the intersection with 68th today, and we would widen this whole section for about 1,000 feet. We would put the bicyclists behind the sidewalk or within the sidewalk so there wouldn't be a conflict. Right-turning vehicles could use this. There's a high right-turning volume, but it would give the buses a good queue jump and potentially a signal priority at the intersection. We would carry those buses through the intersection. There's a stop here where they would pick up their passengers, and then they would merge back in with traffic. So this is we actually did a little simulation of it, and it gives substantial benefit to transit and all the passengers that are in transit, and it doesn't impact auto traffic that much. Actually provides some benefit because some of the comments we'd heard early on were, you know, queuing behind those buses that are stopped. Could we get them out of the way? This also has some, it's substantial. It's very costly. It would take a substantial right-of-way. So imagine 12 feet times 1,000 feet for just this piece of it. And so there are some parcel impacts, two residential, one business property. It improves transit travel times. It improves vehicular travel times. And it relocates the bicycle lane. So it's kind of, that's the half of it. So it merges back in. We have this pedestrian crossing. We didn't want to make that any wider. Then the second phase two of this is further south. Imagine at 60th, we have the same kind of configuration, so widening 12 feet, moving the bike lanes behind it. So it's an extra 12 feet with a signal at 60th. And this provides for, this is an important greenway crossing. So it would provide for signal access across 60th. It would also provide for transit queue bypass, a queue bypass for transit. So we know that queuing in the PM peak extends pretty far south, and this would give that transit travel time benefit. This is the piece in front of Northwest University, and there's a stop in there as well. So again, the bus would get to stop in here, pick up their passengers. Automobiles would go, vehicular traffic would go past it. And again, it improves transit and vehicular travel times. We relocated the lanes. There are some property takes, two residential properties, right-of-ways. And we're not being definitive about what those residential property takes are, whether they're full parcel takes, what have you. They could be reconfigured within the right-of-way. Maybe the center line moves a little, what have you. But anyway, this is kind of a big idea. It's very, very expensive. But it's something that really provides real benefit for both automobiles and transit, and really moves people.
Mr. Asher?
On this one and the one before, relocates bicycle lanes. Does it take both north and southbound bicycle lanes and relocate them, or just those going to the north?
Northbound. Okay. So it's all for the northbound bicycles.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Any other questions? We don't have a cost estimate, but we know it's pretty expensive. Anything with right-of-way. What would that do as far as travel times? It would take you know, it would for northbound vehicles from on 62nd to 9th Avenue, there would be maybe a 27% change in travel time from 48th to Kirkland Way. Again, some more travel time. We remodeled the whole corridor, 108th to 6th and 6th Street. And then southbound, too, even though we didn't put improvements in that direction, adding the capacity and being able to reallocate some of the travel time, we didn't see any worsening, certainly, and slight improvements. Sure.
This is a change for what year?
This is existing. We just looked at existing.
Okay.
I think we do have numbers for 2035, and they're similar.
Okay. We have Mr. Pascal and Mr. Nixon.
So these are improvements in transit speed, not mm-hmm. Not overall improvements for vehicles, correct?
You're right. And we do have improvements for autos as well.
Okay.
And we could report those.
Mr. Nixon and Mr. Arnold.
And so my question was, turn my mic on. Doesn't the traffic back up southbound in the AM peak as well? Or is it not as bad?
It's not as bad. It's not as bad. And to do something this dramatic, I mean, it's got some impacts and it's costly. And the time of, you know, the amount of time during the day that this would provide benefit is not, it's not hours and hours long. You'll, for some portion of the day, those lanes will be empty and people will get concerned when they see empty lanes. So we didn't think it was worth looking at southbound.
Mr. Arnold.
For the northbound traffic, especially the northbound peak, would the same bat lane concept work? Is there a particular reason that isn't one of your proposals versus these improvements that are all southbound?
No, these are northbound. Sorry, these are all northbound. So these are generally PM peak driven for northbound traffic. So the queue, and we had reported before, queues in the PM peak are, you know, 250 cars long, right? So and extend sometimes to 53rd and further. It's a portion of the day. It's, you know, just that peak. Sorry.
Same question the other way. Would the same concepts have improvement southbound because the limit?
We talked about that. The southbound queuing right now is not as bad. I think, first of all, PM peak traffic is worse because it's mixed with, you know, retail traffic and school traffic and other things. In the morning, it's just lower traffic overall. The other thing about the morning is people are getting on the – it widens out. It's not as constrained in the southbound direction. Because once you get to the South Kirkland Park and Ride, it doesn't queue back from there because it opens up and there's three lanes, mm-hmm. things like that. So. We didn't see the same level of queuing or delay. And it might be something we consider in the future. Anyway, as far as solutions we considered but did not recommend, there were a number of transit signal priority options that we raised before. None of them bore fruit and really pushed us to look at something a little bit more dramatic. That was the desire of the Transportation Commission, look harder, maybe something more impactful. It had limited effectiveness for people, transit vehicles. Those were our priorities. And then we found that better solution. For east-west connections and crossing I-405, people raised, create a new vehicular connection at 60th. There's that Pet Bridge today. It's very hard to do that because of grades. But, you know, the engineer in me would just love to try it. But it impacts adjacent arterial streets due to the steep grades, and it impacts neighborhood streets, and that 60th is a greenway designation. So we felt, you know, we left it as that greenway designation and hope that that works. And it connects, 60th connects to a whole host of trails, et cetera, in Redmond. Then the residential parking zones and time of day, we just really didn't find that parking was as big of a problem. We did some parking data collection, some utilization studies, and didn't find that to be the problem and thought better of looking at management of parking as is a higher priority, looking at ways to manage the parking that's out there today. Plus, one of the options that we're looking at for the 68th access management, that puts parking on 68th. So we'll take a look at that. There was a grade separated ped crossing at 108th and Northeast 68th Street, and that also had impacts to adjacent properties. Anytime you go up and over, there's walls and closing off of access. So these are some of the things we felt that these were too impactful.
I think I saw Mr. Nixon.
Yeah, I have a question about the 60th Street Bridge. I will admit to having never walked across that. Is it bicycle accessible now, or does it have steps?
Isn't it a loop? Spiral.
It's a spiral, but it's a ramp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The bikes can ride on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. You can,
yeah. It's not a fun ride.
Is it ADA compliant today?
I'm not going to say that it's ADA.
One thing we might have to look at is if we're going to change the use of it, is that we might be forced to make it ADA compliant. So we have to think about the cost of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Zigzag.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to say we have to pay for it, but we have to account for how much it would cost.
Yeah, as part of your transition plan, you can start to think about how that works. Okay, and then we wanted to talk about the Houghton Everest Center investments. Oh, sorry.
Before you leave that, what are the assumptions for transit mode split? And is there, have you tried a sensitivity analysis where we vary that mode split and it, what's the resultant change in whatever resultant we want to talk about, congestion, trips, whatever?
We did not. We thought the mode split would be pretty low, so we didn't really look at that. Some of the other things, we could take a look at that. Some of the other things we had talked about was, you know, trail-oriented development. Can we start to make some assumptions that people will start using the trail more for their commuter trips? As the trail develops. So we did not assume that. We kind of put everything on a level playing field. We didn't assume other things, emerging technologies like autonomous vehicles either, and that's something that everyone always brings up. But we kind of wanted to put it on a level playing field.
And our plans assume a certain mode split.
Correct, they do.
And we're not trying to model we're trying to model the land use plan, but we're not trying to model the transportation plan.
We're keeping the land use plan and the mode split assumptions fixed throughout this.
They stay steady.
Back to our transportation master plan. Okay, this is the same model that we used for development of the TMP.
And if you can tell me what that split percentage is, I'd love to know it. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So, closing in on the Houghton Everest Center, there are some investments there specifically that we wanted to talk about. And one of the biggest things when we looked at this corridor study, looked at all of the conflicts, the potential conflicts between peds and bikes and cars in amongst these driveways. So at a minimum, with no changes in development, the one of the things or the best we can do is consolidate some of the driveways, put in C-curb, meaning that it can't be crossed, and add some medians, and then removing this crosswalk. So this is the kind of the best we can do, assuming the 60-foot of right-of-way and that, you know, we have the existing land uses on either side. This could stay. It would certainly be an improvement as far as reducing potential conflicts and improving safety. This is something that could occur and continue for some level of development within these adjacent parcels. Any questions on this?
So, Jeannie, would you remove all of the red driveways?
No, they're
you consolidate them.
We would consolidate. Yeah, we would consolidate. For example, we could consolidate all of them into this one drive. So we get rid of the Starbucks one and this one that goes in front of B of A, and then on the other side, consolidate this side into one driveway. I think it's here, and we would remove the one near Shamiana, or is that the name of it? Shamiana. Yeah. So that's assume that we would have more access on 106. We would remove this crosswalk, and those are the things we would do to make this safer. We did see, you know, ped bike spike in accidents on this stretch, and it's midday, so it's related to, you know, lunchtime shopping activities. So this little cross section is a kind of a characterization of what that looks like today. So that's 60 feet of right of way. Closely spaced driveways and intersections. So what we would do is reduce conflicts for pedestrians. We would extend those bike lanes, consolidate the driveways, implement this if no changes are made at the neighborhood center. And we still need to coordinate with the property owners, of course. That's a heavy lift even on the coordination side, right, to close driveways. Another thing we considered was these green bike boxes at 68. So this is your question, Jay. When we extend these bike lanes across, it's a two-stage turn queue, and the putting a green bike box allows bicyclists to be more visible, safer. And we think this is something we could do with no development, but in enhance this. We could do a little bit better on these curb returns, possibly with some coordination with the neighborhood center. So that's something else we could do with no development. This is something, with a greater change, likely, the Houghton Everest development, we could really consolidate all of the access. And Jeff, the other drawing, the blue and yellow drawing I showed, had some different points. But in this concept, we would consolidate access into a new signal. There would be on-street parking, assuming this is retail. So this is what that looks like within an 80-foot right-of-way, so additional right-of-way. We could add parking, on-street parallel parking. The additional lanes, we'd have that turning lane or median, and wider sidewalks. Plus, we could extend the bicycles behind the parking. So this is just an idea what you could do with wider, more right of way, and recognizing the if you have fronting development and floor level retail, there's a real attraction to have on street parking. We would extend the bike lanes. Another feature is adding this right turn lane, southbound right turn lane. Adds a lot of capacity to the intersection. Couldn't do it today because this property is so constrained. Any widening here would take, you know, parking stalls, which that property has barely has enough of, not much of. As I mentioned, you could consolidate this. There might be an opportunity for some crosswalk here. I know, you know, the development might be interested in that. So that's what that looks like. And these are the benefits. It reduces those conflicts, improves access, local circulation. Circulation occurs within the site. There's on-street parking for retailers. There's coordination with the property. It still requires a lot of coordination with the property owners and actually, you know, the additional right-of-way. That could be implemented with this greater change, the 55-foot height. And it would be quite costly. So, oops.
I have a question about them.
Please.
I'm not a transportation expert, but it just intuitively seems to me like on-street parking would be more disruptive to traffic. Mm-hmm. Now, is that the point, that you want to slow down the traffic, or why would we even think about the impacts of adding on-street parking to where there's more or less, at least at some times of day, free-flowing traffic today?
Maybe that's something Jeff could answer too, but certainly on-street parking could slow down traffic, but in a lot of neighborhoods, in new, you know, retailers and developments, they want that ground level retail. This is the easiest way for them to get their patrons in and out. And then the retail parking, it's like on 85th today, Central Way. That parking is essential to those those businesses succeeding. And whether it reduces the capacity of the streets, very minor, and it really just kind of slows the streets down. That's the perception. Mm-hmm. Jeff, is there anything else I should?
No, I think you described it well.
So it's, you know, it's certainly the desirable from a developer perspective.
Mm-hmm. And then I would say that our experience with downtown and on-street parking is that actually kind of functionally it doesn't have as big an impact as, you know, one might expect on the actual operations. You know, the momentary kind of changes when people, you know, choose to park and stuff like that, but it has a fairly small impact on that side. But it's like Jeannie said, it's so critical to if you're moving towards a kind of an on-street retail kind of environment.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Pascal.
A couple of things on this one. Is it necessarily true that the greater development scenario, that this couldn't happen under a reduced development scenario, meaning that, you know, if someone was to redevelop, would they have to dedicate some right of way under our current standards, or does that not apply?
Well, we have some authority under our code to require dedication of right-of-way, if that's what you're saying. Yeah, so we would need to have a regulation, if you will, that would establish this as the standard for the street.
Right.
I guess what I would say, dedication of up to 10 feet of right-of-way would probably not go without some opposition.
Yeah. I just wanted to make sure that this isn't, this can't, clarify whether this can only happen under that scenario.
Well, one other challenge I'll say is when you do things incrementally and you can only dedicate when development A comes in, you have to think about how do you make that transition when development A is then putting in that maybe extra 10 feet of right-of-way. How does that transition over to the next property, which is not developing and hasn't yet dedicated that right-of-way?
And then this is a good summary on the challenges. The one thing that I would just put there is, you know, putting a signal at 106 could encourage folks to cut through the neighborhood a little bit more. So that would be a challenge that would have to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. All right. And, you know, some things we didn't really specifically talk about, but if there could potentially be better circulation within the site and connection to that new signal at 9th if some of those properties develop. But like Eric said, if this is done in parts, it's very, you know, complicated to find the right mix of things or what the value, what the benefits would be if only half of the street widened. So this is what the this is a concept of a bicycle intersection, and this is very pedestrian oriented, and it brings pedestrians out and in front. It puts bicycle lanes behind, and this is a kind of a very stylized version of what a bicycle intersection looks like.
In something like this, where would this bicycle box go?
This is not the bicycle box option.
Okay, so it's just a different option.
It's a different option. So without this, which is a pretty substantial investment, and also we don't get things like this, the right turn that we're looking for, which is, you know, a wider intersection. But you can see it does show how the street, on-street parking would operate. This is just another option to consider and something that could be... could be done.
Very dangerous bicycle place.
Oops. Okay. So what does that look like as far as the adjacent intersection? This is something that you asked Councilmember Asher. So today, the intersection of 108th and 68th, that big intersection right there, operates at level of service E. with average delay of 62 seconds per vehicle. Now, this is probably averaged over an hour. Sometimes the peak doesn't, you know, there's varying levels of peak traffic, and today there's something like 2,500 cars entering that intersection. This is some of the development, but it's also background traffic, the traffic that's not going to the center, for example. In the comp plan scenario, that would change. So distributing trips through that, the comp plan 2035, would obviously worsen substantially, 142 seconds. And that's, you know, that's assuming that growth is occurring on 405 and other places as well. So traffic still increases on 108th. With the moderate change, it's 148 seconds per vehicle. If, as John mentioned, Councilmember Pascal mentioned, if we could put in some of those improvements, the southbound right turn lane is the biggest investment, and green bike boxes to improve capacity. That would go from 148 down to 111 seconds per vehicle. And again, in the greater change, it's a notch up as far as worse without the right turn, this right turn pocket, southbound right turn. But with the greater change and the right turn, southbound right turn, it's 122 seconds. There's not much capacity afforded by the 80 foot of widening that really generally just accommodates parking, but it does afford us continuous bike lanes, things like that, and certainly improve safety. So that's...
Excuse me. I'm missing where the northbound transit improvement.
Yes, you'll have to come tomorrow and see that.
Oh, okay. It's not here.
It's not here. You're right. Okay. You're right.
Mr. Arnold?
And then the greater level of improvements are linked to the greater level of zoning change, because we think we can require or fund those improvements, given the benefits to the developers under the greater development scenarios. Is that why this kind of ladders up?
Yes, but I think it is a policy question for the council to think about. It doesn't have to be that way. I think that's what John's question was, really. Can you separate those? Can you put a wider road with less development, you know, with a three-story option or something like that? Yeah, you could. Just that need to think through how to phase that, how to stage it, so forth, mm-hmm. and pay for it.
John, did you have a comment? Mr. Nixon, then Mr. Asher.
So I want to make sure I understand what this delay is measuring. So what I'm envisioning is I'm driving down 6th, say, and I see a car stopped in front of me, so I have to stop behind it. I start the clock then. And then this delay is the time until I get through the intersection. Am I imagining that right?
It's the average of everyone entering the intersection. So some movements probably
from all four directions.
Yes, and some say a left turn doesn't wait that long, but for a number of vehicles that are entering the intersection, they are delayed. So this number is on average a minute.
Mr. Asher,
it might feel like longer.
I mean, we're talking about tripling it almost. Two and a half times.
Right.
Yeah, it would be a great day to get through that intersection in 62 seconds. In my estimate, I've never
had a
PM peak that you could say you could get through in 62 seconds. I have a real hard time relating to that.
Yeah, you know, we did look, there is a queue, and I'm not sure we are including the queue that extends, you know, 1,000 feet down south.
Or more.
So, but it does include, there is a limitation of how far out it looks at traffic, so because some of the traffic is considered to be rolling along.
Mr. Pascal? Oh, sorry. Do you want to finish your thought?
I think it'll be interesting to see what it, you know, with a new signal at 60th does to break up these queues. Okay.
Mr. Pascal.
Yeah, I guess what I find beneficial about this analysis is, you know, I understand the concerns and the thoughts about, you know, perhaps the existing isn't reflecting what people feel out there on a day-to-day basis. But I think what's important here is the differences between the alternatives. So let's say existing was 100 seconds. Well, then, you know, you would increase the next one an additional 40 seconds. I mean, so it's the magnitude between the alternatives that is really what we should focus on.
Ratios?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And so when I look at, like, the total entering vehicles, for example, 2,500 and existing, and that is an actual count,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's not necessarily accounting for the entire demand that wants to get through the intersection, mm-hmm. right? That's only the demand that can get through.
And so
if you think about that, then you think about, like, the comp plan or any of these other ones, you're throwing in all these additional vehicles that physically can't get through the intersection. So what's going to happen is that queue is going to get much longer, mm-hmm. and the PM peak hour is going to become a 3-hour, 4-hour peak. And so that's the story behind these numbers that we have to be thinking about. And that's why those numbers are very, very large,
mm-hmm.
very large increases. And we're not necessarily adding a ton of capacity to address that increase.
Right. We have an expression in our business, and it goes like this: if it were easy, everybody would be doing it. And I think that this is probably, and it's not just because I live there, as I always remind you, but I think this is the most tricky intersection in Kirkland. I mean, it's, you know, between downtown and the transit center, there's only two ways to get there. And then there's Google, there's the university. We don't talk a lot about that school, but those school zone times kind of stop everything. It's a hard problem, and we think, you know, we're going to be expanding that as a commercial corridor. It's the only source of transit we're going to have. I think this is hard. So I just want to point that out, and thank you for helping us with it, but it is hard.
We did also look at, not in particular detail because it just didn't seem like it would bear much fruit, but this, you know, given the you know, demand, is, you know, you've got two different things. You've got the latent demand issue of if you do have the neighboring corridors, that if you do expand things here, there's probably a lot of demand for people to move to this corridor and just, you know, kind of fill it back up. But also if you did set that aside and say, no, we're going to really try to move more vehicles through here, the exercise of, like, chasing that somewhere to actually just not be us building a lot of really expensive vehicle storage, mm-hmm. There's just no place to really go unless you were to do, you know, say, you know, two lanes all the way from 68th to Northup or something. There's not, like, some tricky little, well, we'll just drop a dual left in here, or outside of that southbound right, there just isn't a place where you're kind of moving the cars that then they can break free and you know, the intersection gets quite a bit better. So I think that, you know, this was our attempt to address what we'd heard from the community as best we could of trying to provide an intersection that works for the center, but also helps address some of those other concerns.
Mr. Pascal.
And yeah, to follow up on that, I think just taking the land use side of it out of the equation, because this is focused, mm-hmm. I mean, this study is helpful regardless of what's being planned for that area. And so looking at that transit lane, you know, I think that's something that would be worth considering regardless of what we decide mm-hmm. here, because as you can see, just looking at this under the comp plan, it's going to get worse, and that means it's going to, that transit line is going to get delayed worse and worse over time, and, mm-hmm. and that's really our people mover. That's our main route. We need it.
That's my bus.
Mr. Asher?
I'm wondering when... Do you ask the question, and maybe this is for Kirkland 2095, do we need another north-south arterial somewhere on the west side of 405? You know, figure out whose ox you want to gore. But how do, is there a way of getting there in 2135 or something like that? Because it would take us 100 years to do it, but we might, you never know until you start. If you could ever do something.
You mean
something
kind
like
of
that.
Like the Cross Kirkland corridor?
No, I'm assuming that's happening. I'm assuming something
another
else.
Another one.
Yeah, okay. Another one.
Expensive. Well, I don't know why it doesn't necessarily have to be west of 405, because
116.
I take 116 to 132nd all the time.
Mm-hmm. So do I.
To avoid going up 108 or like Washington Boulevard.
Okay.
Of course, the people who live on 116th didn't want me to say that.
They know who you are. Any other comments from the council? Do we have?
I just have one.
Yes, please.
I think that those improvements in the sidewalk or in the driveways would have a huge impact mm-hmm. on access to and safety
it's
in the
safe.
Parking lots.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I don't know how many times I've been there when cars they run into each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, near misses.
They're flying mm-hmm. all over.
Yeah, there's true. No direction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think someone from the Planning Commission mentioned that they're doing some of these access management things on 85th and that it's, you know, some real value and benefit, especially for pedestrians.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think it's more approachable in general. I think there were some concerns in the beginning, but 85th work has been... We've improved it greatly. It's safer, it's more approachable, it's more comfortable for drivers and pedestrians and everybody.
More intuitive,
yeah,
for sure. Any other questions? We heard a couple that we need to respond to. Transit, mode split, the operations with that transit lane. So.
Okay. So we are going to return at 7:30 for our regular meeting. Thank you very much for taking on this difficult subject with us.
Thank you.
We're live, Mayor.
Thank you very much and good evening, and thank you for being here, everyone. I'd like to call to order the City Council meeting of February 21st, 2017. We are back in session following a study session for a Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center and 6th Street Corridor update. Ms. Anderson, would you call the roll for us, please?
Councilmember Nixon?
Here.
Councilmember Pascal?
Here.
Councilmember Asher?
Here.
Councilmember Marcioni?
Here.
Councilmember Sweet?
Here.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Here.
Mayor Wallen?
Here. Thank you very much. The first item on our agenda this evening is under communications. It's item 6B, items from the audience. This is the time in our meeting when we hear from the public on matters which are not quasi-judicial or otherwise scheduled for a public hearing. Under item 9A in your agenda this evening, the council will have before it a public hearing on ordinance 4558. Nope. That's not the one. Resolution 5240, declaring Kirkland as a safe, inclusive, and welcoming city for all people. Under item 9B, the council will have before it a public hearing on ordinance 4558 relating to sustaining a safe, inclusive, and welcoming city and adding a new chapter 3.18 to the Kirkland Municipal Code. Thank you. Finally, under 10F, the council will have before it ordinance 4553 and its summary relating to land use and the modification and granting of a preliminary and final PUD as applied for by Larry Scrivenich, Little Lion LLC in the Planning and Building Department and setting forth conditions of said approval. Public comment will not be accepted on any of these matters at this time. We'll have time to speak on those later in our meeting. But on other subjects, please limit your comments to 3 minutes. We also ask that not more than 3 people speak on any one subject. However, if both proponents and opponents wish to speak, then up to 3 proponents and up to 3 opponents may address the council. And that was a long speech by me to tell you that there are no people have signed up to speak under items from the audience. I think you might all be here for some of our later subjects. But if there's anyone who would like to address the council on any of those, anything other than those subjects that I just mentioned, you would be welcome to come forward at this time. And seeing none, I will declare this items from the audience period closed. And the next item on our agenda is also under communications. It's item 6C under petitions. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So we received a petition. As you know, under council rules, you have three options. You can accept and refer to a committee, you can accept and refer to staff, or you can accept and determine that no further action is needed. The staff recommendation was to do number two, to accept and refer to staff for further action, since there's other actions coming up later tonight.
Thank you.
And we need a motion to approve that.
Thank you.
Madam Mayor, I would move that we accept the petition and refer it to staff.
Second. Thank you. It's moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Sweet to accept the petition in support of Kirkland City Council's proclamation to keep Kirkland a safe, inclusive, and welcoming community and refer that to staff for further action. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Thank you very much. That's approved unanimously, and we thank you very much for submitting that petition to us. The next item on our agenda is the consent calendar. Before we have a motion, I'd ask Councilmember Marchione to present the audit of accounts.
Okay, we have payroll of $3,235,069.63 and bills of $2,16,092.06.
Thank you, Councilmember Marchione. Are there any questions, comments, or corrections to the consent calendar? Mr. Pascal.
I had a couple edits to the February 7th meeting minutes.
And have we captured those? Or do you want to point them out to us?
I can point them out.
Okay. I wonder if I need a motion to approve the consent calendar before we do this. Do we?
So moved.
Thank you, sir.
Second.
Thank you. It's moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Marchione to approve the consent calendar. And now, Mr. Pascal, corrections to the
minutes. So on those minutes under the public hearings, item number 9, Councilmember Asher had removed himself from that. And the last motion amendment resolution 5234, it shows that he was there. So I would say to correct that with a 6-0 vote instead of a 7-0 vote.
Okay.
And then under
and a deletion of my name.
And deletion, yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's another under the Scrivenage item 10E, where I recuse myself. This is a similar situation where it shows that I was there and voted 7-0. So I would like those to reflect that I wasn't there. I mean, that I didn't vote. Thank you.
So can we approve the consent calendar and with, thank you very much. Okay. So it was moved by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Councilmember Marchione to approve the consent calendar with those corrections. Well, do we have an ordinance? We do have, no, the question is on the motion. Is there, yes, there is an ordinance. Your crack mayor is on the job. Ms. Anderson, the roll, please.
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Councilmember Asher?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchione?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. So we have moved right along to our first public hearing. This is a public hearing on items 9A and 9B. Item 9A is a resolution 5240 declaring Kirkland as a safe, inclusive, and welcoming city for all people. Item 9B is ordinance 4558 relating to sustaining a safe and inclusive and welcoming city and adding a new chapter 3.18 to the Kirkland Municipal Code. Before opening the hearing, I'm going to ask Mr. Triplett to give us some information.
Okay, thank you. So we're going to try this from the desk here instead of the dais and see if it works. So I have a few brief comments on Resolution 5240, and then the city attorney is going to talk about the ordinance. So the resolution, that's the subject of the public hearing, does a couple things. First, it basically incorporates the proclamation that the mayor gave on January 3rd and that was supported by the entire city council, and it makes that legislative form. What it also does is it directs the staff to review city policies and programs and to see if there's any other changes we should bring back to the council for review or change. It directs the city manager to codify our current police department policies, and that's actually the ordinance that's coming up next. And then this is not the only time the public will have a chance to talk about this. It directs us to have a Kirkland community conversation to identify future steps that we can take to keep this a safe, inclusive, and welcoming community. So happy to answer any questions.
Questions for our staff? Thank you. And some comments from Mr. Raymond?
So then, no, yeah, there we go.
Thank you, Madam Mayor and City Manager. Ordinance 4558 is a companion to the resolution that the city manager just mentioned. And as he suggested, this ordinance, if adopted, would codify existing city policies prohibiting discrimination in the provision of all city services, including but not limited to police and fire, to all Kirkland residents, everyone who works here, and also visitors to our city. It's primarily based, the ordinance, on the city's police power and separation of powers principles related to local law enforcement on the one hand and federal immigration policy on the other. It includes a general prohibition against any city inquiries and information gathering related either to immigration status or to religious affiliation. And the exceptions to that are when required by law or when voluntarily provided. I want to just mention in passing that cooperation with federal immigration officers is required and will continue. It's one of the things that Chief Harris told us was important to her to be able to continue in the historic relationship that the police department has had with the state and the federal government around these issues. But it's also worth noting that federal law does not require states and local jurisdictions to gather and maintain immigration and religious affiliation records, which is something that, if adopted, we would continue not to do. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mr. Raymond. Mr. Nixon.
A couple of things. First, just so the council members know, there were a couple of minor typographical errors in the ordinance, which I already provided to the city attorney, and he's going to integrate those as Scrivener errors. Secondly, my question is, my interpretation of both the resolution and the ordinance is that Kirkland is not claiming the label of a sanctuary city, and in fact, because we're making a full commitment to compliance with federal law, we really couldn't be characterized as being a sanctuary city because we're not doing anything to actively conceal anybody's immigration status. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Nixon, that is correct. Article 8, Section 17 or 1373 of the federal code requires, as I mentioned in my earlier remarks, local jurisdictions and states to cooperate with federal immigration authorities, but does not require that states and local governments maintain records related to immigration or religious affiliation. Interestingly enough, the administration developed an executive order that indicated that local jurisdictions that failed to comply with Section 1373 would be subject to the loss of federal funding, and defined noncompliance with that statute as, quote, sanctuary cities. And so, as you said, we're not declaring ourselves to be a sanctuary city, and the definition of sanctuary city is found only in the executive order, and it's tied to compliance with a statute that we already comply with.
Thank you.
Mr. Pascal.
Just a comment. There's been some questions about this ordinance, and the city prepared this frequently asked questions handout, and I think there's some copies there. I just wanted to point that out to the audience and others that might be attending. I think these are kind of the common questions that we've been hearing from different folks in the community, and ordinances are not always easy to read and understand, so it was meant to be more reader-friendly.
We're going to pass those around, Councilmember Pascal.
Thank you.
Other questions for our staff before we begin? Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Before opening the public hearing, I'd like to provide a little bit of background and context myself on behalf of the City Council. On January 3rd, with the support of this full City Council, I signed a proclamation declaring Kirkland a safe, inclusive, and welcoming city, and one that will not support hate, intolerance, discrimination, harassment, or any public behaviors that create fear, isolation, or intimidation. And you have there are many in this audience that came forward and asked us to do this, and we thank you for your work. Since the proclamation, the full council, together with staff, has been identifying additional ways we can make these commitments even more real in our community, and this was a topic of special focus at our council retreat on February 3rd. Tonight, we're considering two next steps we can take to make our more tangible our commitments to Kirkland as a truly welcoming community. The first is this resolution 5240, which would make the January 3rd proclamation a strong policy statement of the full council. The second ordinance, 4558, would create a new chapter in our municipal code giving the force of law to our city's longstanding practice not to condition the provision of any city services, as you heard described by our city attorney, police, fire permits, or anything else on an individual's immigration status or religious identity. The ordinance would also affirm our intent not to maintain records related to an individual's immigration status or religious identity to the maximum extent unless required by law or provided voluntarily. I want to emphasize that both of these initiatives have come from and at the request of our community and of this full city council. As such, and while neither document has been voted on, I personally would expect that they will enjoy the full support of the council this evening. Accordingly, as you present your testimony, please know that in my opinion, you do not need to convince this council of the merits of either the proposed resolution or ordinance. At the same time, we are all excited and anxious to receive your views. This is obviously a huge issue in our community today, and it's a huge issue for this city council. All of us, I think, are very proud of the way that we in Kirkland talk to one another about tough issues, especially when we don't always see things the same way as others. And we always seem to take the time to speak respectfully and to listen and hopefully learn from one another. We are better for those good practices, and I just know that we're going to continue that this evening. For tonight's hearing, I would ask that individual speakers limit their comments to 3 minutes, and it's our intent that the entire public comment period would last for 1 hour. We have a sign-in sheet, but as Councilmember Pascal pointed out, there is this frequently asked questions about the proposed action for this evening, and also a comment card. So if you're not comfortable speaking or we run out of time or whatever, we would love to get your comments in writing, and you can provide your name and information, or you can keep it anonymous as you wish. So the first person to... Yes, sir. That's right. Yep, one hearing for both items. So I do have a single sign-in sheet. And the first person to have signed in is Mark Jessup. Welcome, sir. And the next person, because we're going to try to move it along, is Robert, is it Valas? Robert. Okay, so you're next up, Robert. Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Jessup.
Thank you very much. To the council, both mayor and deputy mayor, and city staff, and of course the other members. My name, as you know, is Mark Jessup. What you don't know is that I'm a old dinosaur from a neighbor of yours. I was one of the founding council members of the city of Woodinville back in the 80s. At that time, we went to great lengths to make sure that Woodinville was an inclusive city. We already had a very diverse population, a large Hispanic population, and a number of other, at the time, what were referred to as minorities. It would be my hope, although you took some of the wind out of my sails when the good chief has determined that she will always comply with the federal government, that I personally, as a veteran and someone sworn to defend the Constitution, no longer believe in. Oh, well. But nonetheless, I see this as a very positive step, a step that continues something that's always existed in the East Side cities. Because after all, we all know where Kirkland came from, just like Woodinville and other areas. A lot of this city was built by people who came to work in the shipyard down there, and even before then, and a lot of farmers. And they didn't come from just up the street. They came from a long way away. Washington is an immigrant state. We are, all of us go back to other families from other places. So I commend you on what you've done, and I hope you can propagate it throughout all of Washington State's cities. I see a darker time coming, and I believe we will stand by ourselves.
Thank you, sir. So the next person is Robert, and then after that we have Heidi Shore. Welcome.
Thanks. Do I start this myself?
I think Heidi will start it for you.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for the chance to speak on these two resolutions. I'd like to speak in support of both of them. My name is Robert Vallis. I live in the South Rose Hill neighborhood of Kirkland. I'm also a teacher in the Bellevue School District, and we've got two daughters who are in Lake Washington Public Schools here. I can tell you both from the students I work with at Newport High School in Bellevue and what we hear from our daughters at their schools that there's a pretty heightened sense of palpable fear among immigrant communities in the East Side. You know, when I have students who are breaking down in the middle of class, and these are high school students, because of their fears of their families being kicked out of the country, when our daughter comes back from school and tells us that her friend says they're going to have to leave the country now after the election, when her best friend, who is a Muslim immigrant from Pakistan, when her mother approaches us and has to ask us, are we afraid of her? These are circumstances under which it's hard for my students and for our daughters to operate and to really focus on learning. So I want to commend the council on the steps you're taking to reassure the residents of our city and to minimize as much as possible this sense of fear and hatred that I feel like a lot of our immigrant communities and friends and neighbors are feeling. So thank you very much.
Thank you for being here, sir. So the next person to have signed in is Heidi Shore, and after that we have Emmanuel Plesch.
Hello, everybody. I want to thank you all very much for passing both for the resolution and the ordinance. And I would say it, I don't understand enough, but I'd say it doesn't go far enough on one hand, because I would like the federal cooperation removed and Sanctuary City actually upheld. But I'm not sure if I understand that totally right, so I'm going to look at that even more. And I would like to express that it's awesome that we are going to have this, and I would like to see our city actually do things that create community and invite people. I know a lot of people that don't show up at people of color or immigrants that may not feel comfortable showing up in a situation like this or at other open forums, and it's very important that we find ways to communicate with them and reach them and include them, and that we have conversations. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Next, we have Emmanuel Plesch and then Bobette Lee.
Well, thank you. Like Heidi said, I'd like to see this go further. I'd like to see us looking to the Constitution for our guidance more than our current federal leaders. For change to happen, it must start here with us. When we each choose to deny hatred and to embrace love in ourselves, we can let go of fear of the other to realize that we are all human beings, no matter race or creed. Cornel West said, "Justice is what love looks like in public." Our strength as a nation starts here and now. Our strength is in our diversity and inclusion. We all make Kirkland what it is, not in what we think, but in what we say and do. We've come here today to show that we care, and we want it to be known that we are here with open arms for your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. So thank you, sir.
So next we have Bobette Lee and then Samantha Gracie.
Yes, I'm Bobette Lee, and I live in Kirkland. And I'm a retired librarian with the King County Library System. And I wanted to come and give my full support to the City Council. And I just applaud you for adopting this. And it really does fit in with what I dedicated my life to, with public libraries, where you have free, open access to everyone of all ages. And I'm getting very emotional because I feel strongly about this. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Lee. Next, we have Samantha Gracie and then Elizabeth Standall.
Hi, my name is Samantha Gracie. I'm a Kirkland resident.
and I wanted to thank the council very much for considering this ordinance today. I've heard stories going around of sacred places and graves being defiled. I've heard stories of immigration enforcement raids snatching mothers from their children at football practice. This is not the America I was hoping to raise my family in. The America I hope for allows people to call the police for help without worrying about being detained themselves. The America I hope for allows people to visit, to go to school, to fall in love, to raise a family, to live here without being afraid. I hope for an America that sets an example of how to coexist and to thrive with people from all over the globe, enriching the experience. And I believe that can happen if each city stands up for inclusivity. And I'm really proud to live here and be a part of the movement in the right direction. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Grace. Next, we have Elizabeth Standall. I'm sorry if I've said that wrong, Elizabeth. And then we have Lorette Balson.
I'd just like to join in with others with saying thank you to the council for supporting these policies. I grew up in Kirkland, and I now teach at Bellevue College. I teach English as a second language, and 100% of my students are not from the U.S., and many of them have expressed concerns. On the day after the election in November, I talked to my students about what was going to happen in the country, and I said to them, you are very lucky to be in Washington State. This is one of the best places to be at this time. And thank you very much for proving me correct in that. That's all.
Thank you. Welcome. And David Greshler is following you. Okay. Welcome.
Pardon me. Good evening, Madam Mayor, Deputy Mayor, City Council members, and staff. My name is Lorette Balson, and I've lived in the city of Kirkland since 2003 and raised my family here and have a small business here. I'm here tonight as part of the Kirkland Safe Group and an initiative we wish to partner with the city on in signage that's in follow-up to the proclamation that was adopted here at the city denoting us as a welcoming city. We want everyone who lives here and works here and visits here to know we welcome them and safeguard their rights and their privileges. And we want to work with the city on the signage. But we've embarked on this initiative ourselves as well. We envision a logo to be emblematic of our status as a welcoming city, and that this logo will be on all signage. The signage will likely have text that varies. So we may have signs for businesses, we may have signs for homes, we may have bumper stickers, we may have window clings, and the text on this may vary. But we would like the logo to be on all the signage as emblematic of the city being a welcoming city. So we'd like to work with you on this initiative, but have also taken steps to move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your work. We have David Greshler, followed by Debbie Lacey. Welcome, Mr. Greshler.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, Deputy Mayor, Council members. I really would just stand here and thank you for this initiative. And while I support all of it, I especially really support the part that forbids the collection of religious information. Why is that important to me? Well, two personal stories. My father grew up in Czechoslovakia in the 1930s. And, you know, as we all know what happened there, he eventually was forbidden to go to school because he was Jewish. And that was because information was there, you know, and retrieved by the federal government. So this speaks very closely to me. And I think that's really important that we make sure that we protect everybody here. So it's very important to me. Secondly, you know, my mother's side of the family was Hungarian, and they were living there as well, also Jewish. And, you know, my mother's father came to the United States to visit his brothers, and at that point he said, you got to get out of here. This was like 1938. And they said, why? We're Hungarians. Nothing will ever happen here. Well, They did. My mother's mother and my mother's two sisters did come to the United States, thank God. And the rest of her family, apart from one, was killed. And so, again, I think it's just really important that we be safe and that we do everything we can. Because when we hear about words like, Muslim registry, and we hear other things like that, we need to take it seriously. So you are taking it seriously. And I think that's really important. Because at the end of the day, it's better to be safe than sorry. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chris. Thank you. We have Debbie Lacey, followed by Chris Fox.
Good evening, Mayor Wallen, Deputy Mayor, and City Council members and staff and community. I am Debbie Lacey. I'm a Kirkland resident. I have a son in the Lake Washington School District. And I am the director of the Eastside Refugee and Immigrant Coalition, which I co-founded 15 years ago. When you vote on these issues, and hopefully in the affirmative, you will be the first East King County city to do so in this way. I'm very proud to be living here at this time. We know from our members in our coalition that directly serve immigrants and refugees that some domestic violence perpetrators are using threats against their partners, that if they report the violence, they will be turned into the police and therefore to immigration. We've also had people not wanting to come forward on scams. We have people in our community trying to sell deportation insurance and people very afraid to come forward and report this. Putting this into city law, of course, does not solve all problems. And we as the Eastside Refugee and Immigrant Coalition are here to support you, work with you and the community in any way that we can to help bridge the connections that are so crucial to our community living together and really creating that safety and welcoming person-to-person community service to community service and between the city and its residents. So I look forward to those opportunities that come and really applaud your efforts in leadership in pioneering this effort in East King County. Thank you.
Thank you. The next person to have signed in is Chris Fox, and then we have Dick Fisher. Mr. Fox, welcome.
Thank you very much. My name is Chris Fox. I made the decision 40 years ago to come and live in Kirkland. I've never regretted that decision. Raised my family here, practiced law here, and I'm very proud of this community, and I'm especially proud tonight. I thank the city staff, the city attorney, the city manager, and Chief Harris for all coming together and drafting this ordinance and for the council in approving it. On a personal note, my father served in the 29th Infantry during World War II. He was involved in the liberation of a number of concentration camps, and if he were alive today, he'd be as proud of Kirkland as I am. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Dick Fisher. I've lived in the Kirkland, Bellevue, Redmond area since 1951. I came here tonight to, I thought that this was going to be more of a meeting about sanctuary cities. I'm glad to see that that term is not going to happen. The welcoming city is a nice term for that. I want to remind everybody that I don't think that the city of Kirkland, me personally, would want to pay the taxes if the federal government decides to pull money from this city because of sanctuary city status. It looks like we're moving in the right direction here, and I thank everybody for that. That's all.
Thank you for being here, sir. The next person to have signed in is Kay Sue, or maybe Kai. Welcome.
All right, City Council, thank you for letting me speak. I'm celebrating 20 years in Kirkland this past fall. I'm not an immigrant, but my parents and grandparents were the immigrants. So this, I have a bit of tension around this issue. I see a lot of concern about the whole, are we sanctuary or not? And I see a lot of, effort to avoid that appearance in your deliberations, and I appreciate that. I would say that, you know, regardless of how the, you know, resolution ordinance eventually get worded and get implemented, I would ask the city to make sure, you know, take the necessary steps so that if there's any misconcept out among the public that Kirkland is a sanctuary city or sort of, that you would take the effort necessary to dispel that and make clear what this resolution is and isn't. A couple of people have brought up about, you know, people fearing reporting a crime or something because of their status. I think it'd be pretty easy to say in the ordinance that, you know, there is discretion about when it's a crime victim or somebody reporting a crime, that their status would not be noted. And let's see, what's my last thing here? I'm also just going to raise a question. I don't have answers, but does this expose the city to any liability of any unforeseen consequences? I don't know what they might be, but I just want you to think about that. In general, I think the idea of welcoming is good. I've always felt welcome in Kirkland, and I appreciate that. Just trying to keep it in bounds. Thank you.
Thank you. So we've reached the end of our sign-in sheet. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the council at this time about Resolution 5240, declaring Kirkland as a safe, inclusive, and welcoming city for all people, or our ordinance related to the same? Yes, please come forward, sir.
Hi, good evening, everyone. My name is Jawad Khaki. I'm a resident of Kirkland, and I've lived in the east side now for about 28 years. I worked at Microsoft for 20 years, building Windows, starting from Windows, I don't know, 3.0 or something. So if you actually have any problems, I take some. But really, I really would like to actually commend the council, mayor on the proclamation. And the one thing I want to share with you, you know, since this crisis happened on 20th of January or whatever, one thing I'm really so happy, whenever I go in Kirkland with my wife, who actually wears a hijab, she, you know, people greet her and hug her and nice. So, you know, it's very important the message comes out from the council on creating the climate that we have of an inclusive, everybody's welcome. I feel very much part of Kirkland. You know, I really appreciate the reach out that Chief Harris has done, making sure that our event center on State Street is safe, and really want to commend you all for the great work you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Please come forward.
Hi, I'm Reverend Marion Stewart. I'm a minister at North Lake Unitarian Universalist Church up here in Kirkland. And I just want to say thank you to the mayor and to the city council for all your work and staff at your retreat, for taking the work that a group of us originally did, issue the original proclamation, and look what's happened. It's amazing. Thank you.
And we appreciate your leadership, Dr. Stewart. Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the council? Please come forward, sir.
Good evening, Mayor and Deputy Mayor and Chief. My name is Farshad Amiri. I was born in Iran, and I've been here for almost 43 years. My whole life has been around Seattle. I went to University of Washington, did undergraduate, graduate school, and I have two children. I'm a resident of Kirkland. And I think one of the, first of all, I'm proud of our people here, our businesses, court system, and also the people that are here. I think there is one of your members of community talked about the people who are afraid to come in here. I'm a naturalized citizen. I have learned a lot about Constitution. I know this really well. When I left Iran, I remember the night before I left, and my father has passed away, but he told me three things that night. And he said, son, you are going to a country that is a rule of law, separation of powers, and also largesse and good heart of American. Tonight, and this last 33 kind of days, has kind of brought that memory back. I'm proud to be American first, but also I'm proud to be Iranian American and people who are in this city. I'm proud to be here, and tonight I thank you for that.
Thank you.
Hello, Council. My name is Chris Moody. I just wanted to say thank you for making this a reality. I had a good friend named Emerson who lived in Juanita. And, you know, unfortunately, about 7 or 8 years ago, he had his car broken into. I should back up. He was here illegally from another country, from Brazil. And was a really good friend of mine. Sweetest guy I've ever met. And he had his car broken into, and he called the police to file a report. And he was asked for papers. And he ended up getting deported. And so I'm really happy to hear that we've codified this into our city's policy. I'm also a little sad at the same time, you know, that he missed the boat, so to speak. But thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the council? Thank you very much. I'll declare this public hearing closed. Discussion, council. Mr. Nixon.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I hope you'll indulge me. I wanted to take this opportunity to also mention some good work that's being done by our city's representatives in the state legislature. Representative Stanford and Representative Kloba, our former council member, and Senator Palumbo have all sponsored legislation. The most recent incarnation of that is House Bill 2097. And just for everybody's information, what this bill would do is first establish that employers cannot require employees or prospective employees to disclose their religious affiliation. If employers become aware of someone's religious affiliation, employers would be prohibited from disclosing that information to anyone without the employee's consent and knowledge of the purpose of the disclosure. State and local agencies would be prohibited from collecting any information about religious affiliation or to participate in any establishment of any religious registry. And the bill would also exempt religious affiliation information from disclosure under the Public Records Act. And I'm happy to say that this bill was voted out of the House committee unanimously, out of the Judiciary Committee, with a, like I said, unanimous bipartisan vote. So this is definitely a bipartisan issue. The bill is currently in the House Rules Committee waiting for a vote. And so if anyone is so inclined, you may wish to contact your legislators and remind them of the importance of this issue and that they should bring that bill up for a vote and pass it. Thank
you. What bill number is that again?
2097.
Thank you. Other comments? Mr. Arnold.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Local government is where you have your local parks. It's when you call the fire department for help. It's simple things like water and garbage and law enforcement. And how we deliver those services, your religion, ethnicity, political views, sexual orientation, physical, mental, sensory ability, or immigration status has no place. We want everyone that lives and works and visits here to feel safe and welcome and comfortable coming to city staff with questions, problems, issues, and reports of crime. Kirkland, I'm proud to say, has had longstanding policies to ensure that our city is welcoming to all. And with our action tonight, we're strengthening those policies and giving them the force of law that they will continue with future staffs and will take deliberate action to change with future councils. These protections will be in the Kirkland Municipal Code. We've seen in the news where reports of bullying have increased. We've heard the stories from people tonight where they or their friends and neighbors are in fear. There have been issues in the region where mosques and Jewish community centers have been threatened or attacked. Through our actions tonight, we say that we stand together. We stand with you. Kirkland and the East Side will not tolerate hate. This is also the week of the Day of Remembrance, 2 days ago. Remembering with the Japanese internments that our country has not always lived up to its values. And I appreciate those who have come here that have said there is more that needs to be done, given that remembrance. But this is only the start of the conversation. In addition to what we're saying as a community tonight with these actions, we're going to continue to listen. Through what we have in this ordinance, we're going to come together as a community. We want to continue to hear what is happening, and we will consider future further actions if needed. Thank you to everybody that has come here tonight. Please continue to stay involved, to send us new ideas, to celebrate victories, but most importantly, to hold us, your elected representatives at every level of government, accountable. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Sweet?
You guys are really amazing. And you make me very, very proud to be sitting up here representing all of you. What we've done here tonight is a really important thing. And I just want to sort of say this conversation is just beginning, just as Jay just said. One of the things that I would like to invite some of you to help me with is that this year, for our 18th 4th of July celebration, we have chosen the theme, Liberty and Justice for All. What I would like to do is to work with some of you, perhaps, in making sure that we can make the day, the 4th of July celebration itself, be a celebration of all the diversity that we experience in our own community. So I'm looking at you, Deb, and at you, Laura. Let's make this thing happen. Let's celebrate all of us on the 4th of July. Thank you.
Do you have a comment, Mr. Triplett?
I think we just wanted to clarify there was a couple questions asked, and the city attorney wanted to address them related to liability from these actions before the council acts.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Mayor. The question of potential city liability came up during the public hearing, and I wanted to just offer a couple of brief comments on both sides of that issue. The first is that the ordinance has been drafted in a way that makes explicit reference to except to the extent required by law. And as I noted in my earlier remarks, from my perspective, and I think the perspective of other attorneys with whom I've spoken, the city is in compliance with federal law, because federal law, while it requires cooperation, and there are issues like cross-jurisdictional criminal investigations where cooperation continues to be important, it doesn't require us to ask and maintain records related to immigration status or religious affiliation. So from a liability perspective, I don't see liability given the way the ordinance is drafted. If at some point in the future new laws are adopted or enacted, I am sure that they will be scrutinized with respect to the various important constitutional principles that are in play around these issues, including the right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures and the requirement that Congress not establish a religion and so forth. And so I just want to mention both sides of that issue.
Thank you. Mr. Nixon.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just briefly, recent events, of course, have caused us to be concerned, and for our Muslim friends and neighbors to be concerned, and our friends and neighbors who are present in the country without having gone through the prescribed process. But it's important to note that this should not be of concern only to them. People ask, you know, could it happen in America? Mr. Greshler asked that. Most of you know I'm a member of a church whose members were driven from state to state across the United States on the basis of religious persecution. And a church about which the governor of the state of Missouri said all the members of the church had to leave the state of Missouri or be exterminated. And that extermination order was only lifted in the last 20 years or so. So we really don't have to ask if this kind of thing can happen in America, because it already has. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Marcioni.
just want to thank everybody for coming tonight and giving us your comments. It's nice when the council considers doing this, something like this, which by some of our community could be considered really bold or obnoxious. And you've got our backs. You're there supporting us, telling us to go ahead. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I've frequently posed in gatherings where I was teaching that it has been persecutable for people to be Christians. And to admit that when it becomes persecutable for people to be Muslim, I will be a Muslim. And I think most of us here will be Muslim on that date. I'm torn to the core that the tenets of our constitutional republic are being tested at this time, and they'll be tested for some time to come. And it's the all of the encouraging words that you can think of are those that you should muster for yourselves and your friends. But don't ever give up. Thank you. Thank you. Would you like to know?
Yes, I would.
I'd like to move resolution 5240, declaring Kirkland a safe, inclusive, and welcoming city for all people.
Second.
Thank you. It was moved by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Deputy Mayor Arnold to approve Resolution 5240, declaring Kirkland as a safe, inclusive, and welcoming city for all people. Will all those in favor please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Thank you very much. Resolution 5240 is approved unanimously. Yes, sir.
Madam Mayor, I'd like to move Ordinance 4558 relating to sustaining a safe, inclusive and welcoming city, and adding a new chapter to the Kirkland Municipal Code.
Second.
Thank you. It's moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Marchione to approve Ordinance 4558 relating to sustaining a safe, inclusive, and welcoming city. And this is an ordinance, so if I could ask Ms. Anderson for the roll, please.
I'm happy to do that. Councilmember Nixon.
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal.
Yes.
Councilmember Asher.
Yes.
Councilmember Marchione?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. Ordinance 4558 is approved, and I would like to thank our community for your leadership and our city staff who did hard work to get behind this, and the council who's been, I made a proclamation. It was just symbolic, but it was not just me. It was this whole council, and we came together and worked on it and made it something, I think, that's very beautiful and very moving, and been a lovely evening with all of you, so thank you for your support.
We don't applaud in here.
Okay. All right. Well, are we going to move on to something like the state legislative update number three? We will give you a moment if you don't want to join us for our state legislative update number three. Thank you very much for being here. We really appreciate all of you.
You made an exception to
the I did. I just thought it's too much joy to contain. Next item on our agenda is item 10A. It's unfinished business. It's the 2017 legislative update number three. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So this is number three of our continuing update on what's going on down in Olympia. And here to provide us with that is, you can't hear me? Can the council hear me on this?
I can hear you.
Okay, is our Intergovernmental Relations Manager, Lori McKay.
Who's deaf? Are we done? Are we ready?
We're on.
Good evening.
We got work to do, business to attend to.
What's that?
Testing. Ready to go.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council Members. For the record, I'm Lori McKay, your Government Relations Manager. This is your third update on the city's legislative priorities. In a nutshell, all but two of the city's priorities are alive and well at 8:25 on February 21st. My remarks include detailed summary on each priority, or if, in the interest of time, Council prefers that I jump to a one-page summary, I'm happy to. Checking in what you would like me to do.
Let's do the one-page summary.
One-page summary. Okay. So just a little bit of a fib there. I am going to just real quickly, like, check in on the cutoff calendar. As a reminder, this Friday, February 24th, is the fiscal cutoff and transportation cutoff for bills in those issue areas. Several of the city's priorities have been referred to fiscal committee, so we have a little bit of work to do this week to get those, some of them heard and then moved out of committee. And of course, March 8th is the last day to consider bills in the House of Origin. So now, jumping to the one-page summary, and I will move to my notes here. like I said, the bottom line is all but two of our priorities are still alive. In the housing and affordable housing and homelessness category or priority, 1797 was moved out of committee last week and was heard in the Finance Committee today, this morning. I believe it was amended to, they removed the REIT 3 provision, and it still includes the REIT 1 and 2 flexibility and the recording fee, but the REIT 1 and 2 flexibility. House Bill 1570, the document recording fee standalone bill, was heard last week and also referred to House Appropriations, where it is right now. And then Senate Bill 5254 is Senator Fain's bill. It includes both REIT 1 and 2 flexibility and the document recording fee. It also includes buildable lands issues that are a bit sensitive, so it's been going through some amendments and has been referred to Senate Ways and Means. Our MPD priority, a City of Kirkland champion bill, the Senate version, sponsored by Senator Palumbo, was passed by the Senate last week and has been referred to the House. So, hooray. its House companion bill is scheduled for executive session in House Finance this Thursday, so it's still alive also. In the Public Records Act priority, our exemption for non-appointed volunteers priority was picked up and inserted into a bill or created into a bill by Senator Cooter. It was referred to Senate state government but did not receive a hearing, so that bill, the bill is dead, but the issue is being still discussed with stakeholders as a possible amendment into another bill. City Manager Kurt Triplett was testifying. Actually, he didn't testify on that bill, but he did meet with stakeholders last Friday down in Olympia. On the nominal fee for electronic documents, that issue is contained in House Bill 1595. That bill is in rules. On the pathway to predictability for fines, that bill, again, was sponsored by Senator Cooter. It was heard last Friday. The city manager testified in support of that bill on Friday, and it did not move out of committee, so that bill is considered dead. It's the issue is not supported by the members of the requester community, but the city manager did spend an hour meeting with those folks, and so the discussion's out there and occurring. It's a good thing. On replacing the property tax cap, House Bill 1764 was heard in Finance on February 10th. Mayor Wallen testified in support of that bill. And then the Senate version was dropped by Senator Peterson, and that bill was heard last week, I think on Thursday, and Councilmember Nixon testified in support of that bill, but it did not move out of committee. Basic Law Enforcement Academy funding, Representative Kloba has been spearheading a letter. That letter was finalized and 32 House members signed on to it, and it's been submitted to House leadership. A Senate version of that same letter was circulated by Senator Wilson, I believe, and 11 senators, 11 senators signed on to that letter as well. On the CKC Redmond Central Connector connection project, there's no real update there. We will the forms, the applications have all been submitted, and we're kind of waiting until after the state revenue forecast comes out in the middle of March before we start seeing any of the budget proposals coming out of either chamber. There's no update on the Kingsgate TOD. Staff are reaching out to WashDOT and Sound Transit to find out the status of WashDOT's research and get another meeting scheduled for that. So just a quick wrap up for this week as we are marching towards February 24th cutoff for fiscal bills. We will be advocating that hearings on 1570 and appropriations happen, and also we'll see if a hearing happens on 5254 in Senate Ways and Means. We'll be advocating that 1797, 1764, and 1456 are moved out of finance and go to rules, and we'll continue working with stakeholders on the public record stuff. Do you have any questions?
Questions for Ms. McKay?
No.
Ms. Drescher?
Just a comment. It was a very good week last week with the Association of Washington Cities. I think we scored well with all of our legislators, and thanks to Lori, we did in fact have a dinner, and it was a very productive dinner. We got some things that at that dinner that we didn't get in our meetings. So thank you very much. And I think we had 27 folks with
30.
East Side cities all across the board, and legislators from every district. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Councilmember Asher, we thank you for your leadership as the chair of our legislative working group. And Lori, we really do appreciate you getting us to and from Olympia and getting us where we need to be. And don't even have to think about it. You just show up in the right place. So thank you very much for your
You're
hard
welcome.
Work.
Thank you.
And these updates, it's a lot to get down to a one-pager. So yes. Thank you. The next item on our agenda is under unfinished business also. It's 10B, the Kirkland Arts Center Seismic Upgrade Funding Request. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So being ably assisted here by my Deputy City Manager, I have to pull up one slide for this issue. I'm doing this for Ellen Miller-Wolf, who couldn't be here tonight. So the request is in your packet. We discussed at the last council meeting. There were several questions that were asked. The primary one was about whether or not this would qualify as a public purpose, a governmental purpose. There's a fairly detailed description from the city attorney in your memo about it. What would happen is if the council approved this is that we would be providing $50,000 to the Kirkland Arts Center for phase one of seismic upgrades. This would match money that's already been received from King County for Culture and likely lead to additional monies from King County and hopefully the state of Washington. In return for this money, the Kirkland Arts Center would make a commitment to providing several programs, and that was also listed in your memo. There's a highlight up here on the slide. The way we would secure this is through a contract between the City of Kirkland and the Kirkland Arts Center. This is similar to what we do with the Kirkland Downtown Association. But in the end, the decision as to whether you find this to be sufficient governmental purpose is really up to the City Council. So you have three options tonight. We need a motion. If you wanted to approve this, you could either conclude there is sufficient government purpose, you could conclude there's not and send us back to find more, or you could simply not act on this tonight.
Ms. Sweet.
Madam Mayor, I would like to move approval of the request for partial funding of the seismic upgrade to the Peter Kirk Building for the Kirkland Arts Center.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Sweet, seconded by Councilmember Marchione, to approve the Kirkland Arts Center request for seismic upgrade funding. Discussion. Oh, was it? I'm sorry. I thought it was both of you. Okay. I heard his voice also. Okay. Discussion. Mr. Asher.
Madam Mayor, I'm not going to support this. I'm concerned that this is one step in a long pathway is something that's diverting the Kirkland Arts Center from being what it could be. My preferred solution would be that the city take over responsibility for the facility, work it similar to we do with the Kirkland Performance Center, and let the Kirkland Arts Center be the Kirkland Arts Center and work on their primary mission, and we could do things that we, I think, do well, and they could do things that they do well. I just think that it's going to be an increasing burden. This is phase one of a multi-phase approach, and I see it as a real burden on that organization. Maybe they don't, but I've seen them go through significant stress just to get to this point. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments? Ms. Sweet.
I served a couple terms on the board of directors of the Kirkland Arts Center, and I have to attest to Councilmember Asher's comments with regard to a long-term struggle with simply the issue of maintaining the building versus maintaining the organization as the fabulous arts organization that it is. However, at this point, if we were to move to consideration of Mr. Asher's sort of suggested option or what might have to happen at some point, it seems to me that this would be part of it anyway. So I would continue to support this at this time. I do believe the long-term conversation about the ownership of the Peter Kirk Building when we're in flush times is probably a very important thing for us to talk about.
Thank you. Ms. Marchione.
I could agree with Mr. Asher and take this as something we should look upon in the future, but agree with Ms. Sweet that we need to move ahead now with these dollars to match the money that's there and get additional money from the county and the state. And this work's going to need to be done whether it's by the Arts Center or by the city of Kirkland.
Mr. Paschal.
Yeah, as someone on the outside working to get funds through the city for improvements, I can certainly understand the request here from the Arts Center. And this being a historical building, if your own community won't invest in it, it's hard to ask for regional partners to come in and provide the matching funds. So I'm in support of this.
Thank you. Other comments? Mr. Nixon.
A question for the city manager or the city attorney. If we wanted to, could we add a condition to this at this time that in the event the city were to acquire the property in the future, that this $50,000 would have to be credited back towards the acquisition?
Mr. Nixon, at this point, if the council were to proceed, it would be a matter of contract between the city of Kirkland and the KAC, and it would be something that, if agreed to, could absolutely be embodied in an agreement, be a negotiation.
So, Madam Mayor, I'd like to move to amend the motion to include a provision in the contract with KAC that in the event of any future acquisition of the building by the city, that the $50,000 would be credited towards the purchase price.
Thank you. So it moves by Councilmember Nixon and seconded by Councilmember Asher to include a provision in the contract with the Kirkland Arts Center that in the event that the city acquires the building in the future, there would be a credit of $50,000 towards the purchase price. Discussion.
Madam Mayor.
Yes, ma'am.
I don't see any purpose in doing that, so I'm going to vote against the amendment.
Other comments? Ms. Sweet, then Mr. Arnold.
And I think we're having two different conversations here. I think we have the initial need to both start the work and provide a level of funding that may entice other givers, the county, the arts communities to give more money. I think that's one conversation. I think the amendment goes to a different conversation, and whether we were to purchase we're not even talking to the Arts Center here, so that discussion we have to go a long ways towards having that discussion, whether we acquire the building, where we take over liability for the building, whether we buy the building. That's a much fuller discussion, yes. I think, than can be managed in this amendment, so I can't support it.
Thank you. Mr. Arnold?
I'm also against this amendment. The $50,000 that the council would be contributing to this is part of a overall seismic upgrade that's over $500,000. And I have no wish to complicate an effort that is already going to be quite a complicated art project for the center to put together, cobbling together funding from different sources. I am encouraged on the future discussions of saying how do we save the Peter Kirk building and whether city ownership is the best way to do that, but it is a separate issue that should be handled entirely separately, so I'll be voting against this amendment.
Others? Okay, the question is on the motion. It was an amendment to the main motion made by Councilmember Nixon, seconded by Councilmember Asher, to include a provision in the contract that in the future, if the city acquires the Peter Kirk building, then there would be a $50,000 credit towards the purchase price to offset this expense. Will all those in favor of that amendment please say aye?
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
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 No. I'm sorry.
Do you need a clarification of who voted which way?
Kathy, did you get me as a no?
Yes, ma'am. So this the question is on the main motion, and if there's more discussion, that's just fine. It's moved by Councilmember Sweet, and I captured Ms. Marchione, but I think Ms. Marchione and Mr. Arnold spoke at in unison. So you guys can flip for it. To approve the funding for the Kirkland Arts Center seismic upgrade. Any further discussion? You know, I completely agree with Mr. Asher that ultimately the goal should be for the city to own this important historic building, for the Arts Center to be able to focus on providing arts programs with their fundraising. This building has, it's just going to be one of those, I don't want to use the term money pit because it's a beautiful, historic, important building, but beautiful, historic, important buildings take a lot of money. And it's just a stress on the organization to have to try to take care of it and keep it up, and it could be so improved. And I agree the ultimate model would be for the city to own it, and then they would rent the space or we would do something else. And hopefully that work will be ongoing. But I also agree that so much work has gone into this, and I think Mr. Pascal captured it perfectly, that if we're not willing to invest, then how can we ask others to? And as I understand it, there's money out there, and several sources of funding are looking at helping us with this. And I don't think we need to complicate the discussion any further. So I'm going to vote yes also. So it was moved by Councilmember Sweet, seconded by Councilmember Marchione. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed say no.
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 Thank you very much. Also 5-2. The next item on our agenda is, I'm checking in, it's 8:45, so we're still in good shape.
Take a break.
Resolution 5239, setting forth priority goals for the 2017-18 and adopting the 2017-18 City Work Program. City Manager.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Mayor. Hopefully I'll go through this quickly. The main questions are at the end. As you know, we adopt a resolution every 2 years setting the work program for the city and the priority goals. as was laid out in the council memo, these would be the 6 priority goals that would be adopted as area of focus for the next 2 years. Notice there are 6 out of 10. If there's no questions, we'll move on to the resolution itself.
Okay. No questions? Okay. Please.
Okay. So my suggestion at this point is this is a restatement of each of these that's in the resolution. So if there are suggested changes or small edits, just give them to me as we go through. But the first one is implementing the Cross Kirkland Corridor Master Plan with the focus on Totem Lake and the South Kirkland Park and Ride. Any suggestions or changes to that one? I think, Councilmember Asher, you had suggested change.
There's one. We're talking about bridges at the South Kirkland Park and Ride, and I think if we can find another word, like maybe of a South Kirkland Park and Ride connection, would maybe express that better.
Yeah, I think that actually does give us more flexibility because we may look at having to redesign that structure. So if we change it to South Kirkland Park and Ride connection to further the goals.
Yes.
Is the council okay with that change?
Yes. So this would come back then. We would still be able to pass this tonight?
Yes.
With these tweaks? Okay.
Yes. Great.
Thank you.
Second one is renovating Fire Station 25, constructing new Station 24, and siting Station 27. Any questions or comments on that one?
Nice and clean.
Thank you.
Okay, and then explore potential ballot measures for the fire station modernization and public safety operations. Any comments or suggestions on that one?
Good to go.
Okay, great.
One comment. Should we incorporate anything in there about the strategic plan? About meeting the...
That's an ongoing thing, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
And these everything are in there is from the strategic
plan. Right. Everything in there is from the strategic plan. So
I realize that.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's good. But we can clarify that when we bring it back for other updates that it's consistent with the strategic plan. The next two, expand the maintenance center. Any comments or questions on that one? And then partner with the Regional Coalition for Housing, churches, and nonprofits to construct the permanent women family shelter in Kirkland.
Mm-hmm. Yay.
Good. Okay.
Yay.
Yes, Mr. Nixon.
So on the maintenance center, we've had discussions about whether it would be expanded in place or whether there would be like satellite maintenance centers. Do you consider this language to encompass all those options?
I do. I mean, you could say maintenance center capacity. You could add the word capacity. I thought about that afterward because then it could be in different places.
Mm.
if you wanted to get more flexibility.
Or maintenance center facilities.
Yeah, that'd be another council's preference.
As long as we have an understanding that we're not necessarily talking about just expanding the existing maintenance center.
I like capacity.
Yeah, capacity is better. Capacity. They could work, they could go to 24-hour operation.
That's true.
That's true.
Subject to some union negotiations, but yes, we can. All right, so we'll add the word capacity after maintenance center. And then anything on the women's family shelter?
Ms. Marcioni said yay.
Yay.
I don't know if you caught that.
So I do have an editorial one on that. I generally don't like slashes in these kind of statements. So how about a permanent shelter for women and families?
Mm-hmm. Excellent. We can do
sure.
that.
Yeah, that's nice.
Make that change.
Yeah, I used to have a sink U.S. Army Europe used to say, is it and? Or is it or?
Or. Yeah. Okay.
And. Or divided by.
Great. So we can't slash the funding then either, right?
Yeah, I mean, right. All right. Divided by.
So fund capital investments for Totem Lake. And this relates to all CIP type investments. So parks, Totem Lake Park, as well as street investments and others. Real kindness.
Good on this one, I think.
Okay. Replace the city's core financial and human resources software. We're good.
And so then glamorous.
Facilitate community policing. Any word changes or suggestions on that one? All right.
I do have an issue on the Totem Lake one. Totem Lake can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. How about if we said Totem Lake Urban Center?
Urban Center. Okay.
And by the way,
council concur with that?
Yes.
Yeah. On the next one about the financial and human services software, if you think you can get that done in one biennium, you will be absolutely singular in your accomplishment.
You remember the Tracy King County experience with that, right, Kurt?
Oh, we're working on it.
It was recently brought to my attention that a lot of that community policing is kind of a term of art. And that sometimes people don't know what we mean when we say that. And what we really mean, I think, is strengthening the relationship of mutual trust and respect between the police department and our community. And that's way too long.
Wow.
But do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, so part of the implementation of this is actually a series of community conversations that would happen with the police department and the city, as well as residents. So, but that is the goal. You said it very well.
Mm. Okay. Okay. All right.
Our last two that I have on my list. So partner with Sound Transit, State Department of Transportation, King County Metro. Any suggestions or changes to this one?
Yeah, I think we're good.
And then final one. So we did add a phrase, procure a new solid waste contract, because that's the process we're also under, and engage King County and Kirkland on the future of the Houghton Transfer Station and landfill. So.
This is a robust work plan, Mr. Asher.
Question. Remind me when our solid waste contract expires.
June of 18.
Okay.
So we're in the procurement process right now for that. It's underway.
I've been here that long.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
So the final two, these are the potential initial initiatives that the council discussed at the retreat. And so the first one, I'll just take them in order. So the first one was a discussion about whether or not we wanted to have some sort of community initiative based on the For Love of Kirkland program and then the Safe, Inclusive, Welcoming City initiatives we just discussed earlier today. So I took a shot at drafting one if the council's interested in that. That's the Enhanced Resident and Business Engagement in Kirkland through community-based initiatives that foster a safe, inclusive, and welcoming city and a love of Kirkland to further the goals of public safety, neighborhoods, and economic development. But this was not discussed as to whether you wanted to add it or not, so I want to first ask if the council feels this rises to the level of a work program item or just something we should just continue to do.
Comments, Ms. Sweet?
Well, I know it's already being discussed at neighborhood meetings, so it's going kind of viral, which I think is actually a pretty good thing. I guess I just wonder how we sort of still hold on to it in a way that if somebody decides they do want to wrap power boxes, we can help facilitate that. And so I'm not sure it does come to a... I think emotionally it is, But I'm not sure that in terms of work, it needs necessarily to be an initiative.
This is kind of two issues, isn't it? Mr. Asher.
Yeah, well, I would move that sense a little bit further forward, because I think we are looking at a change in direction that is very much multidimensional across the staff, that I think it warrants having an action plan of its own, and having that as a goal, and it makes us more accountable rather than a year and a half from now saying back and says, oh yeah, we did that, and you know, check the box. I think it's something that if we put it on there, we elevate it a bit, and I think that will help us carry this through the biennium in a more tangible way than working on the emotions of the moment. So I would suggest using Kurt's wording and incorporating it.
Other comments? Mr. Arnold.
I'd originally looked at this both with the For the Love of Kirkland initiative and the Safe, Inclusive, Welcoming City as values that should be incorporated across our entire work plan. But in looking what the city manager has drafted here and hearing Mr. Asher's comments, I do think it deserves a spot in the work plan that we can look back and evaluate how we did after the end of the biennium.
Mr. Nixon.
And when I think back to our retreat, several of the points that I raised had to do with improving public engagement. And they really span a number of different city departments. And so by elevating this, my hope would be that we would have each department in some way talk about how they can improve engagement with the public. And so I would be supportive of this.
Okay, I see support. I wonder if we could insert the word energized in front of neighborhoods or some other descriptor. A love of Kirkland to further the goals of public safety neighborhoods is not exactly a goal, right? Energized neighborhoods.
What is the official name of that goal?
Actually, neighborhoods is the official name.
It is. That is it.
Okay. It is?
Yeah. Yeah. Each of those that are in capital is the actual current goal title.
Mm. Okay. No, it's good.
It's a great goal.
It's very well
There's
done.
A sentence that goes with it if you want me to read that. But.
No, yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, well, of course, now I have to scroll up to it. Well, I'll find it. It's in the goal sheet that's in the packet.
Oh, yeah. Well, it sounds like you've got a consensus around adding okay. this item.
So given that, this is long enough that I think we probably need to have a motion to add this to the resolution on line 87, because you then add it as a new 11, and with the language as I drafted.
So I move what he said.
Say thank you. I think that was moved by Deputy Mayor Arnold. Are you okay to second?
Sure.
Thank you. Let's move to add the language on the screen to line 87, moved by Deputy Mayor Arnold, seconded by Councilmember Asher. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say no. Thank you. That is approved.
Okay, then my last question is there's also considerable interest at the retreat of a combination of both parking, creating parking under Lee Johnson Field and covering it with artificial turf, and also having potential artificial turf fields throughout Kirkland. So I wanted to check and see whether the council is interested in adding this as a work program for 17-18, or maybe evaluate something like a feasibility study to come back, and then maybe it's a future work plan item.
Ms. Sweet?
I think we need to do a feasibility study. And I, you know, I don't know how we find, if we can find a way to do that reasonably. I wouldn't do a feasibility study for the full artificial turf issue that we talked about in follow-up to that, but I would definitely do the study of Lee Johnson Field and or Peter Kirk Park and an artificial covering. And what I just think we've put this issue off too long.
Yeah.
I would have brought a copy of Bob Muir's book for one of you, and we could talk about the parking issues. They are not going to go away with Kirkland Urban and all of the development downtown. We have to do something.
And Mr. Arnold?
The thing is, we are doing something, and we have some things that we've already decided on and have funded, including studies of what we're doing with potentially the Lake and Central lot and the Ox lot in Moss Bay. We do have Kirkland Urban coming online, which will be significant shared capacity, and we have the City Hall South lot under construction as we speak. And I am in favor of getting those projects done or started before we look at taking on something as all-encompassing as the Lee Johnson Field, underground parking, et cetera. So I would not be for adding that to the work program at this time.
Other comments, Mr. Pascal and Mr. Asher.
Yeah, thank you. So regarding these items, my interest is around the artificial turf, but that also, you know, lends itself to this Lee Johnson Field, because you'd naturally investigate that if we were to build a parking structure. I was thinking perhaps we start small related to the fields, not even a study, but more a discussion with user groups to see if there's support or interest at all, because why spend money evaluating all of that if there isn't that interest from a citywide perspective? And I was thinking that that discussion could perhaps happen as part of the field fee discussion that I believe the Park Board is going to be taking on. So perhaps that's something that, you know, could be assigned to the Park Board. Just to kind of see if there's some interest at all. And then based upon that, then we decide where to go at some later date. And I'm in support of what Deputy Mayor Arnold said about the parking. I do feel like there's a lot of things in play right now with Kirkland Urban and our parking lot here. And Kirkland Urban's building a lot of parking, so I kind of want to understand that a little bit more before kind of knowing that this is going to be a big item before kind of rolling up our sleeves and getting in there.
Thank you. Mr. Asher.
Thank you. We've heard from a number of folks in the community about artificial turfs over the years, so I think that's will be verified as we move forward. I don't think that that's a work program item, but I do think that it would be worth, and we're talking a 2-year time frame here, sometime in year two, that we look at and examine how could we help develop the Kirkland Park and Ride facility that is in conjunction with all of the other development, that it's not going to get smaller. It's going to continue to get bigger here in our downtown, and I think this is a golden opportunity to do it, and the sooner we look at it, the sooner we might be able to find some money. And it doesn't have to be a feasibility study. I don't think it has to rise to that, but I think that we ought to address the issue and see if there are approaches that we could take or that we want to include or exclude in our pathway moving forward in the future.
Thank you. Mr. Nixon?
I also don't believe that this rises to the level of a work plan item now. I would support the idea of referring this either to the Park Board or to the Public Works, Parks, and Human Services Committee for further study with a view toward it becoming a work plan item in the future, but I just don't think it's right yet.
Can I ask a question? Oh, Ms. Marshoni, yes.
Yeah, I was going to say I'm with Mr. Pascal and Mr. Arnold on their views, and I'm not even sure it's ready to go to a committee or the Parks Board. I think it's just a huge project, and we have to take into account the other infrastructure that's being built at Kirkland Urban and see how that's going to work.
I had in my mind that this work plan item went with Lake and Central, that we had been talking about that for quite a while. And so in my mind, this, in my...
I'm wrong about this, right?
Well, it's always been
discussed. I've been wrong a lot tonight.
As they've been discussed, but they've never been officially linked together. So, but that's certainly another option as part of the Lincoln Central feasibility. We could expand that a little bit to look at this option.
I had felt that we were ready to take on Lincoln Central again, and that we this would be a good time to do it because...
And there is money in the budget for that.
For that.
Yes, there is money in the budget for that.
So that's why I was supportive of this, because I felt like those things went together and the next step would be feasibility study.
Can I... Kirkland Commons.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yes, yes, I wish you would.
Okay, thank you. So I think just if I can summarize, it sounds like there's consensus that it's not ready to be added as a work program item itself, but there's a difference of opinion on whether it should be explored. So maybe what I could do is come back with several options for exploration ranging from little to big, and the council can make a second decision or referral to committee, but give you some more options like potentially link it with Lincoln Central, you know, potentially do nothing, so on and so forth. Would that be helpful? Because I think you need maybe a little bit more nuance to the choices here on on parking under the...
Sure.
That sounds good.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
So, just in terms of comparison,
this kind of right. So that'd be one of the options, is if you wanted to combine them, how much additional resource would you need? And so we'll bring back a series of options for this, but we'll make sure the first question of not including it on the work program, I think, is settled.
The whole idea of us being able to do Lake and Central in a way that isn't a structured parking is that this
could be the structured parking.
Could happen. So, yes, options. That sounds great. Do you still want us to adopt this tonight?
Since you're not going to move on that,
we can always add it, right?
I think you have the ordinance in front of, or the motion in front of you, the resolution in front of you.
Do I have a resolution?
Yes, we're looking for adoption.
Yes, you do. Was it moved?
No.
Okay, can someone move it?
I will move resolution 5239, setting priority goals for the 2017-18 and adopting the 17-18 city work program.
Second.
Thank you. Moved by Councilmember Marchione, seconded by Councilmember Pascal to approve resolution 5239. Will all those in favor please say aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no? Thank you. Resolution 5239 is adopted. That's a lot of work for a lot of people in this room.
As amended.
Yes, sir. As amended. Yeah. Yes, as amended. I'm wondering if we should take a break. It's 9:05. Better take a break, yes?
Yes.
Okay. Shall we return in 15? 10.
10.
10.
Let's do it. Rich Mayalovich. Oh. Okay, we are back in session after a 10-minute break, and we are moving right on to unfinished business. It's item 10D, the Thin Hill Middle School Maintenance Pilot Program. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So to walk you through the pilot program is our Parks Director, Lynn Zwakstra, and then at the end, if the council is interested in the pilot, then we would need it to be approved by motion. So, Lynn, take it away.
Good evening, Council. My name is Lynn Zwakstra. I'm the Director of Parks and Community Services. I'm here this evening to talk to you about a pilot program to take on some basic maintenance at Thin Hill Middle School. The memo to council outlined kind of the history of the Playfield Partnership, and so that partnership did begin in 2001. There have been 9 fields enhanced through the Playfield Partnership, mostly done through 2001 through 2007. In 2008 through 2016, there was no funding available, but due to the 2012 Parks Levy, in 2017 and 2018, there is, again, new money available to go forward with the City School Playfield Partnership. Starting in 2019, the 2012 levy starts to shift some of the capital dollars from capital to maintenance, and that's kind of a crucial piece of this particular project. Throughout the years, Kirkland National Little League has requested that Parks Maintenance and Operations take on the maintenance for Thin Hill Middle School. In particular, this is one of their primary fields that they utilize for practice as both a softball and a baseball field. As you saw earlier, in 2018 to 2016, there was not funding available either for capital or for the ongoing maintenance and operations at that particular field. The stars were not perhaps aligned as maybe they could be now. So there's a few factors that are aligning at the current moment. One is that the 2017 budget does in fact have CIP funding available for the Playfield Partnership. Also, Lake Washington School District has in its budget an enhanced level of service for the school fields starting in this year. And so they are actually going to be increasing their level of service at several of the fields, including Finn Hill Middle School. So they'll be able to maintain the grass outfield to a higher level of service than they have in the past, and that's good news. And then also Kirkland National Little League, as you received today via email, is able to contribute up to $3,200 for this year towards this maintenance pilot. So what we're talking about is a limited pilot to take on for the year 2017, March through July, some basic infield maintenance that includes leveling, weekly dragging, and some basic mound work. Of course, it also includes materials and supplies, the seasonal labor, and obviously a vehicle necessary to make that happen. The cost would not exceed $11,424. And so what we're potentially looking at is shifting money from the 2017 CIP project for the City School Playfield Partnership to the operations budget for 2017 to engage in this pilot project. So if council is in agreement with the recommendation, we would be able to shift that funding and take on the basic infield maintenance for Big Finn Hill Middle School.
Mr. Asher?
Is the number the same before and after the Little League's contribution?
That contribution should decrease the amount, but we kept the recommendation the same to for an amount not to exceed $11,424. There's still a few miscellaneous expenses we're looking into, and just to make sure that we have everything accounted for, we're looking at the language not to exceed that amount. But yes, technically, with their contribution, it should decrease the amount necessary.
Okay. Mr. Pascal?
Well, I'd like to make a motion.
Please.
Make a motion to approve this maintenance pilot program for the Finn Hill Middle School and shift $11,424 from the 2012 levy CIP funding.
Not to exceed.
Yeah.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Pascal and seconded by Councilmember Asher to approve the Finn Hill Middle School maintenance pilot program to shift an amount not to exceed $11,424 from the 2012 levy CIP funding to operations funding. Discussion, Mr. Arnold.
I wanted to appreciate Councilmember Pascal's bringing this to our attention. I think this is one of the first emails we got from him since he joined the council of things to do. And also appreciate the Parks Department being flexible and looking at how we could do this as a pilot. This is quick responsiveness and very much appreciated.
Thank you. Councilmember Pascal.
Yeah, I too want to second that. I want to thank City Manager and Lynn, Parks Director, for being open to this idea and thinking creatively on working from the For Love of Kirkland event. I think that that map that you showed at the beginning of the presentation is very telling, that we've invested heavily over the years in our school play fields. And as we expanded into a larger city, there's more opportunities here before us. And so I'm looking forward to this this process that we're going to be exploring as part of the park with the park board to look at what other fields we can make capital improvements and then have ongoing maintenance into the future. I'm also excited that there's this a real need in the community for more play fields, and this is perhaps a way where we could do more with less and look at other fields, and kind of look at different ways in which we can maintain fields at maybe a lesser cost. So that we can have more available to our community. I know this is a big deal for the Kirkland National Little League, and before I was on council, I had been working on this issue for, I believe, 2 to 3 years. So it's nice to see it come to fruition.
Good job, you. Well done. Thank you. Any other comments? It was moved by Council Member. Yes, but yes, Mr. Asher.
Thanks. I would like for us to take a look at across and working cooperatively with the school district, what's happening across the school district with the investments there, and are other cities contributing to, or is it just Kirkland? I haven't gotten a sense of how that may have changed since we initiated this program. And it just seems to me like we probably need to begin to work to stick equipment up in the north reaches of the community, because I know that was one of the things that caused the price to go up when the Little League asked about it. So maybe we can help avert that if other things come up where we can work cooperatively. Thanks.
Other comments? Thank you very much. It was moved by Councilmember Pascal, seconded by Councilmember Asher to approve the Finn Hill Middle School Maintenance Program and associated funding. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, say no. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Pascal. You made a difference in your community today. That's
here,
a big
here.
Deal. Thank yes. you. The next item on our agenda is item 10E. It's ordinance 4559, et cetera. City Manager, would you like to describe?
Okay, so we did not have a formal presentation on this. This establishes a fee that was discussed when the council adopted the critical reuse ordinance and the surface water design manual updates. So this just puts a fixed fee in for design environmental review. So our director, Eric Shields, is here if you have any questions.
Mr. Asher.
Madam Mayor, I'd like to move ordinance 4559 in the summary relating to planning and building department fees.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Deputy Mayor Arnold to approve Ordinance 4559. Is there any discussion? Ms. Anderson, would you call a roll, please?
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Councilmember Asher?
Yes.
Councilmember Marcioni?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. Ordinance 4559 is approved. The next item on our agenda is item 10F under unfinished business. It's ordinance 4553 and its summary. This is the scrivenage matter. City Manager.
Okay. And Madam Mayor, I think this presentation will be made by the city attorney.
I'm going to be recusing myself.
Okay.
So I'm just
thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Pascal. Yes. Nobody leaves baby council member in the closet. Go get him after this. Please proceed, sir.
Okay, thank you. So the city attorney is going to provide a brief presentation on this before council action.
Thank you, Mr. City Manager. I'm mostly here to answer questions. I'd be happy to summarize the procedural posture of this quasi-judicial matter. But you have before you a revised ordinance that we've drafted in response to direction that the council gave us by motion at its last meeting to grant and modify the recommendations of the hearing examiner with the addition of an additional item of mitigation related to the retaining wall and buffering landscaping, which we have drafted and hope and expect it's responsive to the motion that you adopted at your last meeting. It's ready for action tonight if you're ready to proceed. And as I mentioned, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Ms. Sweet.
Madam Mayor, I'd like to move Ordinance 04553 and its summary relating to land use and the modification and granting of a preliminary and final PUD as applied for by Larry Scrivenich, Little Lion, LLC in the Planning and Building Department. File number... etc.
Second. Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Sweet, seconded by Councilmember Marcioni to approve Ordinance 4553. Is there any discussion? Mr. Asher.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. On the Section 2 of the ordinance, we are ordering placement of in this case, treatment and or buffering landscaping on property that is not controlled by the applicant. How can we do that on someone else's property?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Asher. It's a very good question, and we wrestled with that. And the way we attempted to resolve it in Section 2 is to require the posting of a performance bond in the amount of $10,000 that would guarantee the expenditure of up to that amount in one of two ways or a combination of the two ways. The first would be landscape buffering that would be developed by the challenger on its properties. And the second would be some kind of treatment of the retaining wall on the applicant's property that would be done by the applicant, but with the approval of the challengers. So that's how we resolved who did what on whose property. The applicant would deal with the retaining wall, but it would be on a basis that, as it relates to treatment, was approved in advance by the challenger, and the buffering landscaping would be done by the challengers on their property.
And who has the ability of making the choice as to what is done?
I think the intent of Section 2, and as we understood your motion and what we heard from the applicant, was that the applicant was agnostic as long as the total amount did not go beyond $10,000. So it would be a combination that essentially the challenger would choose.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Yes, Mr. Arnold.
So as we have discussed this, part of our position here is looking at public benefit, and I've been very concerned given that this is an area where the zoning allows for additional density as an incentive with public benefit. The applicant has talked about the things, the benefits that he is providing with the rapid flashing beacon near McAuliffe Park and some dedicated open space and playground improvements on tract A and D, but has also said that these are not buildable lots. And so I do have some concerns of whether the benefit is comparable to mitigating the impacts. However, given what we've seen out of our staff report and our hearing examiner, I've concluded that the code is not specific here, and we'll be voting for this. I think the idea of incentive zoning under a PUD is a tool that we're going to want to use in the future, and I hope we can clean this up. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments? Okay, it was moved by Councilmember Sweet, seconded by Councilmember Marchione to approve Ordinance 4553. Would you call the roll, please, Ms. Anderson?
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Asher?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchione?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. Ordinance 4553 is approved. Can we? Oh, someone's getting Councilmember Pascal. All right, we're going to move on. It looks as if we have no new business. We have council reports. Maybe we'll just wait a moment for Councilmember Pascal to come back to us.
So he can make a report.
Yes. Regional and committee reports. Councilmember Nixon.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just a couple things. Of course, since our last meeting, the Sound Cities Association Public Issues Committee met, and I sent the notes for that by email, as usual. Nothing particularly important to highlight. On the 14th of the month, we had the latest Kirkland Nourishing Network Food Box Day, which was, again, very successful. I may just have to stop reporting on them because they're always very successful.
No, don't stop.
And at the north side, we had 69 families. I don't know what it was at the south side, but it was great. And then this morning, I was in Olympia for a meeting of the Washington State Public Records Exemptions Accountability Committee, otherwise known as the Sunshine Committee. and we talked about a couple of issues that were of interest to Kirkland. One is that there's interest in clarifying the exemption for disclosure of employment applications. And the real question is whether that exemption applies to applications for appointment to vacancies in elected office. Because in some elected offices, you are an employee, in others, you aren't. And also how it applies to applications for vacancies in boards and commissions. And so the only action the committee took at this time was to kind of add that to their agenda for discussion over the coming couple of meetings. But it's one of those things where if we have a position on that, we may want to make it known to the committee. I go to most of the meetings, so I could do that. And my understanding of our current practice, and maybe the city clerk could correct me if I'm wrong, is that we would make those applications available by public records request, but we don't proactively publish them. Is that correct?
It is correct. However, if somebody made a public records request for a board or commission application for a volunteer versus an elected position, even for the elected position, there are some redactions that we would make.
Right. Yeah, addresses, phone numbers.
Exactly.
Yeah, those kind of things, yeah. So anyway, that will be an interesting discussion. There were like five agenda items. The other one that was kind of interesting was the discussion of the prohibition on releasing lists of individuals for commercial purposes. And there's apparently a lot of different interpretations of how that works in the law. And so the committee will also be looking into that. And so it would be interesting for me, in terms of representing the city's interest in the committee meetings, to find out how we deal with requests for lists of individuals for commercial purposes. The last thing I wanted to mention is that and I probably should have brought this up while Lori was here. I've engaged over the last couple of weeks in many, many meetings on House Bills 1594 and 1595, the Public Records Act reform bills, meeting with representatives of the newspapers and the AWC and the Washington State Association of Counties. We're making very good progress towards agreed language that will be able to be given to the sponsors of those two bills to submit as striking amendments and move the bills out of the House and over to the Senate. So good progress there.
Good. Thank you. Yeah. Councilmember Pascal.
I had the opportunity to attend the Eastside Transportation Partnership meeting, my first meeting as a Kirkland City Council member. And we talked about two issues. One was heard a presentation on a regional transportation benefit district that the communities in Southeast King County are looking to put together to fund transportation projects. And then the second one was about the ORCA card. And this was something that perhaps our transportation folks could look into, but you can get access now to ORCA data, so you can see how people are utilizing the transit system. And you can, for example, if you want to see people in Kirkland where they're going to and from on transit, you can access that rich database and make perhaps informed decisions about investments in transit and other things. So that would be, it was a pretty interesting presentation. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Councilmember Asher.
Nothing tonight, Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Sweet.
Ms. Wack, was a very fun and eventful meeting last week, and John just did the minutes, so I'll send them out to you. But the bottom line is that the demand management study is now on hold at the request of the county executive. So, Kathy, remind us what we're going to do to figure out. We didn't talk about this at the meeting. So the next steps in your mind are?
I think we need to do some outreach to the county because okay. But from the last time we talked until this recent MISWAC meeting, the decision had been made to postpone the demand management study. And so because the county saw such diverse opinions in the cities, and so I think we need to do a little more outreach with the county.
So basically we're stalled a little bit. It doesn't mean we can't continue our conversations with individual council members and and potentially with Bellevue around trying to seek opportunities where we can get a conclusion to either do we need a new Northeast station or do we need to do the demand management study. Anyway.
And the conversations with Bellevue will be key there. So.
Exactly. Cascade Water Alliance, we're still having discussions with regard to whether or not we're going to generate power on top of everything else. So that's just a lot of fun. If there are any wrinkles in it, we will not move forward with it. But it's very an exciting kind of a thing to look at. Got an Economic Development Board meeting Thursday this week. And at EMAC, we're working on public policy for electeds. So more to come.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor Arnold.
The Planning and Economic Development Committee met on February 13th, and I have two items to let everybody know about. We did a review of sign enforcement, and if you recall that city staff, while we were working to make our sign code content neutral, had not been enforcing our sign code. And with the adoption of content neutral sign codes, we're now free to begin enforcement. However, what we are finding is that there's a impression in the community that the portable A signs are allowed in within a certain radius of a business, when actually portable A signs are not allowed under our code. And so...
Every other kind of sign.
But you see a lot of them as the portable A signs. We will have an opportunity to talk about what we want to do about this when we have our joint meeting with the Planning Commission on March 21st. In the interim, city code enforcers will be noticing those signs that they are illegal but will not be taking action. This is something we should keep in mind as we're looking at the planning work program on whether we want to tackle this and how fast. Eric, do you have anything to add from that discussion?
No, just a sensitivity about this issue on the part of the staff. We don't want to go racing out and enforcing before the council's really had a chance to talk about this and make sure that's the direction you feel comfortable with. So just a little bit of caution.
Ms. Sweet?
I just want to mention that after we had our meeting, I did mention it to one or two folks downtown, and it's not going to be very well received. People have invested a lot of money in these signs, and they've been out there for how long has it been? A couple of years, anyway.
So an A sign is not allowed at all in the city of Kirkland?
I think that's correct, yeah.
Well, and the other signs are those banners that you see everywhere on 85th mm-hmm. now.
Right.
And well, there's a number of different, just drive up 85th.
Mm-hmm.
Go to Totem Lake.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One comment, if I might, is there's supposed to be another phase to the sign mm-hmm. examination and trying to change things in enforcement and then change things again in the rules might not be talk about people being resistant to one thing, they'd be resistant to multiple things.
Right.
I agree. You know, it would be good to get the Chamber of Commerce involved in a conversation before we make any policy changes, I think.
So this should be something that will be part of our discussion on March 21st in our joint meeting with the Planning Commission. Second item is the Planning and Economic Development Committee on March 13th will be doing an update on residential suites. If you recall, our regulation for parking on the Pantley site requires a report on parking impacts within the neighborhood from residents not using the parking. The committee will be reviewing that report on March 13th. I know at least one other council member outside of the committee is interested in seeing that. If others are interested in attending the committee, please let staff know so that we can properly notice the meeting.
You shouldn't have to notice the meeting any differently, should you? It's a public meeting.
It's a public meeting of the committee, but if it's going to be a public meeting with a quorum of the full council, it needs to be separately noticed.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. I want a copy of the report, for sure.
I think we'll get a copy of the report if you want to see the presentation and ask questions. Yeah. Please contact staff. Finally, today, the subcommittee that you appointed to review the board and commission applicants met. You will see this as part of the next council packet, but I want to give you a heads up that we are recommending 26 interviews and or meetings with incumbents that are seeking reappointment. It's kind of on the lower end of the range of what we've done in the past. In addition, there is a applicant who is not available for the meeting on March 17th. And wondering if council is open to have a special meeting before our next council meeting to be able to schedule an interview briefly before that.
Yeah.
This would be March 7th.
Great.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Arnold.
I just want to add so that the council members understand that part of what we looked at today was because in a lot of positions we've got incumbents for both seats and the youth seat that we're not recommending we interview other people. So just so you're aware of that.
So I don't really have anything to report tonight. I just wanted to mention that Friday night the Kirkland Performance Center is having a benefit concert. Cream Tangerine is performing, and if you can make it out, that would be great. There's 20 tickets left, is what I've heard. So it's a near sellout. I'll get you a ticket. Can you get your ticket? Okay. That's it. So we are up to the city manager's report.
Okay. Two questions related primarily to calendar. The first is the 2017 meeting calendar. Also at the retreat, you discussed going ahead and making all the changes for the rest of the year. So if you look at page 314, the main proposed changes, one is changing July 4th to July 5th. That's already taken care of by the KMC. It makes the change automatically. But then we wanted to see if you wanted to cancel the August 15th council meeting, reschedule the November 7th meeting to November 8th because that is the election day, and there's five council seats in Kirkland up for election that day, and then to cancel the 5th and 19th and have a special meeting on December 12th. So looking for concurrence from the council on that.
The only thing is I think we need to notify CAN. The regular CAN meeting is on November 8th.
Okay. I don't know, the park board meets that day as well, so.
Okay, looks like everyone's in agreement with
that. The other thing we did suggest in the memo that we should probably create an actual procedure for this, so refer to the Finance and Admin Committee to develop a procedure for calendar changes. It's somewhat gray in a few areas of the code. So.
Everybody okay with that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Then, what I just...
Don't go out of your way to codify things that we can easily do on the floor.
So, thank you. I think it's more about giving you the authority to do it, not setting the dates.
We don't have the authority. Excellent.
So, Amy Boland asked me to just remind you right now, she has blocked out May 5th for the council's finance retreat on all of your calendars, and it's free on all of your calendars. So, we just wanted to make sure everyone knew that and let us know if you have any conflict. Otherwise, we'll go ahead with May 5th as the date.
Second camp, the financial part of the retreat.
Mr. Nixon? Looking?
Yeah.
Cinco de Mayo?
Now there's a...
That's a holiday.
There's a theme.
There's a holiday.
May 5th is a holiday?
Cinco de Mayo.
Cinco de Mayo. I don't think it's any.
It is an excuse to have Mexican food for lunch.
That's okay, there we go.
that's my job. There's a Congress for New... Urbanism in Seattle is meeting that day, and I may be already registered for it.
Do you want to confirm and get with Amy?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. That sounds like we have a plan.
Then, wow, one last question about the calendar. Are there any other additions to the upcoming council calendar that you'd like to suggest tonight?
I see none.
Okay. So then the next one is just to confirm the city meetings with the neighborhoods, the council meetings with the neighborhoods, that you see the agenda and the format, which has been your traditional format, and just want to affirm the council wants to continue with that format and see if you have any questions.
Do we like the format? Any changes?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
Format's good.
So we do have the one extra because the Everest community postponed their meeting a couple times last year, so it's carried over to this year. So that's coming up April 11th. So there's going to be four this year. And then finally, just one of those interesting challenges with respect to the government. When we sign up for our ORCA card with the ORCA passport program, we are required by King County to purchase a ORCA card for every employee and FTE in the city, which includes the council. So we had to buy a card, and we did, and intended to give that to you. But we also discovered that we had to have the salary commission officially grant it to you because it's a benefit. So just recently discovered this and had a special meeting of the salary commission. You'll be happy to know that they recommended that you receive the ORCA card we've already bought for you as your official benefit. So
great.
That will now be something that's included in your future package.
Because
I've been using it every week.
Yes. So. And now you can officially. So just want to thank the city attorney and the HR director for putting that together and making sure that you're all official and legal with respect to the ORCA card.
I actually heard about the salary commission meeting, and the commissioners were very complimentary of the professionalism of our city attorney and our human resources director, and felt very well staffed and well taken care of, and it was a professionally, they felt treated with respect, and it was a great meeting. So thank you. Excuse me.
Okay. So that's all I have, Madam Mayor, unless anyone has any questions.
Any questions or comments for city manager or his team?
Great. Thank you.
Seeing none.
Good job, yeah.
Good job. So this is an items from the audience because it's before 10 p.m. Do I need to read this?
No.
Okay. I don't see anyone who wishes to address the council. So I will declare this items from the audience period closed, and it's a very special night tonight, so thank you all. I'm happy to be a part of it. Good evening.